Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Think of the prestige.
No.
Think of the respect.
No, no, no.
Think of the Tony.
Hello, all you theater lovers, both out and proud and on the DL, and welcome back to Broadway Breakdown, a podcast discussing the history and legacy of American theater's most exclusive address, Broadway. I am your host, Matt Koplik, the least famous and most opinionated of all the Broadway podcast hosts, and we are continuing our Tony series until we get to that fateful day in June at the David Koch Theater. And with me today is a writer, a critic. You might have read some of his reviews for Slant Magazine. He has his own podcast, The Present Stage. He's an Outer Critics Circle nominator and voter, or just nominator? Both. Yes. He's nodding. Both. He do the both.
This is my first time as a nominator, so I think I vote. I'll find out.
No, I'm pretty sure you do. I'm pretty sure. I think that's how it works. And then he also has a nonprofit, Hear Your Song, which he'll talk about towards the end of the episode. But today he's here to talk with me about our absolute final Tony predictions, as well as the Tony nominations we would do. Please welcome to the pod, Dan Rubens. Hi, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt. I am a frequent listener of your podcast, and it's very cool to hear the intro live.
Live and in Zoom.
Yeah, it's like going to I've been to some of the like late show tapings, and it's like seeing Colbert in person.
Oh, well, I don't know if I can say that, but it's definitely, you're seeing some of how the sausage gets made. Yeah. And I think you'll be a little disappointed at the end, because they'd be like, oh, it's how it sounds on the podcast. Like there's no magic trick. He just sort of, he'll edit some things out, but mostly it's just what it is. So Dan, you have been seeing pretty much everything this season. You've seen everything at this point.
I have now seen everything, except I obviously didn't see Illinois on Broadway because it hasn't started performances on Broadway, but seen it off Broadway.
Yeah, so. You saw it at the Armory, and it's the same show. So yeah, and I mean, I saw Hell's Kitchen at the Public, and my friend who works at the Schubert said it's 95% the same show, and I said that's a shame. And but you know, they just got some solid reviews last night that I don't understand, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Great,
fantastic. So Dan, we're gonna do, as I said, we're gonna do our final ultimate predictions, because in between the recording of this episode and the episode I just did with David Lynch, the Tony committee came out with some new eligibility rulings, which luckily Dave and I were pretty much on the pulse for. But anyone who listened to that episode knows, like, Dave and I kind of had to do two different roads for certain categories, because we're like, well, Betsy Item, we don't know yet. Featured lead, Marianne Plunkett, featured lead, we don't know. But now we know. And there are really only a couple of shows left to do rulings on, but I think they're pretty obvious where people will go. So we're going to do our predictions, our absolute final predictions, as well as how we would do the categories if we were totally in charge of the nominations. Because what people don't realize when they come out with fire about nominations is that it's not one person making decisions. It's a whole group of people who vote separately, and then those votes get tallied.
I also think that there's a sense of, like, that the taste of nominators will somehow coalesce around some sort of norm or some sort of general communal consensus, when in fact it's just, as you said, individual people who are may just really love one performer coming into the season, and or really love one sound design that no one else noticed, and can really just
Yeah, well, and that's something that I speaking. So speaking about our critic circle, which we simply cannot spoil. But, you know, what I've always talked about with the Tonys is that it's not the same as the Oscars, because the quote unquote precursors for Tony Awards, the Drama Desk, the Outer Critics Circle, the Drama League, they are all very different nominating and voting bodies. There's no overlap. So a show can get a lot of Outer Critics Circle or a lot of Drama Desk nominations and then come up short on Tony nomination day. It happens. Actually, I would say it kind of happens every year. There's like always one show that does really well those first two and then not as well on Tony's, and then one or two shows that don't do well in the first two and then do really well with the nominations. And they're always fun because you can sort of sometimes see where the momentum is going. But I always give that caveat for people. You know, it's they're all just different bodies with different tastes. So, you know, sometimes one person will get nominated for Distinguished Performance at the Drama League and then nominated at Outer Critics Circle and Drama Desk and then not get nominated for the Tony. And people get mad. And I go, it's not one person who said yes, yes, no. It's like a total of 140 different people.
Right. And I also think that for like Outer Critics and Drama Desk, without getting into any of the specifics of our nominator community or our decisions, I feel like critics naturally are A, making their opinions public throughout the year. They're not kind of saving it until one round of votes at the end.
Yeah.
So there's sort of a sense of like what we believe, what we put in print early on is sort of how we might vote later on, because we've sort of committed to opinions and are working hard to convince other people of them all year. And also looking at the nominator list for the Tonys, they are a spread from across many different facets of the industry. So mm-hmm. may come in with really strong feelings about specific categories or specific art forms that they specialize in a different way. So just sort of the focus might be quite different. And they also probably know a lot of the community personally yeah. better than we do too.
And the Drama Desk nominating committee is pretty small. I think it's like 9 or 10 people. And I believe they come together to nominate. Like they have a meeting and they sort of figure out the nominations together. The Tony nominating committee, I think it's a total of between 50 and 75, but that number shrinks over the year, over the season, depending on how many people have to recuse themselves.
Right. Because I looked at that list and was like, oh, Whitney White should not be voting for Best Actor of Play.
Exactly. And then on top of that, everyone votes separately. And yeah, so, and as you said, it's a slew. So it's, they make sure to have a mix of actors, writers, designers, directors, producers, you know, agents, things like that. They want to make sure that all different points of views are included. So it's fun. And with that in mind, Dan, we have two separate points of views. So we're going to talk about our predictions and what we want. You are the guest. So why don't you start us off with a category that you would love to jump into?
Great. I kind of feel like just sort of setting the ground rules with one of the big show categories. Why don't we do best play?
Best play? Okay, here we go. I have a little sheet that I kept from the last episode. So best play, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 candidates.
Yep.
The committee hasn't officially decided on Mary Jane, but I think I'm 99% sure it'll be considered a new play, so we're keeping it in there. This means we've got 5 nominations
yep.
for the category. Yeah. Okay. So give me the 5 you think will happen and the 5 you would want to happen.
Okay. So I kind of separated my things into like locks, what I thought was in contention and what I thought had no chance. So my 2 for sure locks are Stereophonic, obviously. And then I don't see a world where JoJo's African Hair Braiding doesn't get nominated. So those are 2.
You make me so happy right now.
Then there are 4 that could happen, and I have to pick 3. Mm-hmm. My 3 right now predicting are Mary Jane, Patriots, and Prayer for the French Republic, mm-hmm. which is not Mother Play.
I have the same 5 for my predictions. I see Mother Play today, so I cannot tell you whether I would make it in my like wannabe 5. I mean, you can tell me if it would be in your wannabe 5.
It would not be in my 5. I think it's a production that people will be really excited about the performances and more divided about
the play.
Play itself.
I'm a Vogel fan, so that's a shame. But, you know, again, sometimes your pancake isn't as good as the last one, but you can make another good one in the future. Okay. So I'm going to say, honestly, I will say that my 5 predictions are also the 5 that I want, because, you know, as long as JaJa is in there with Stereophonic, I will be a very happy boy, because Zsa Zsa was so delightful. It was glorious. And then Stereophonic is the exact same, just a very different kind of show. And I'm to have both of those plays this season, I was very thrilled. Patriots, I admired. I wasn't engrossed, but it's not a bad play. It's a good play, and it's a British import. So I think it's obviously getting in. Prayer for the French Republic, I liked that a little more off-Broadway than on-Broadway. Did you see both?
Yeah. So actually, I don't have Prayer for the French Republic in my five I would select.
Oh, what would you kick it out for?
You're going to be disappointed in me already. I would have The Shark is Broken in my fifth spot. Because I continue to feel that Prayer for the French Republic, while I admire a lot of it, and I mm-hmm. actually liked it better on Broadway than off Broadway, interestingly.
Interesting.
Because I just felt more, for obvious sort of contemporary news reasons, felt more just like hooked into the actual subject matter of the conversations, or felt more alert to them, I guess,
mm-hmm.
audience member. But I still feel like so much of the play feels to me like we're just putting debates into people's bodies and not fully sort of living in these characters or these relationships. And The Shark is Broken, at least I had seen Jaws for the first time the night before I saw it and was like, this is fascinating. Director's commentary on the making of Jaws.
It's like barely about the making of Jaws, though. It's mostly about these three dudes with daddy issues.
Sure. But there was nothing about it that I was deeply distressed by. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm distressed by Prayer for the French Republic, but I wasn't disappointed in it. It was basically what I expected it to be.
And sure.
Prayer for the Republic, I thought, could have been tighter. Although I will say I was more deeply moved by the sort of connections between the historical scenes and the contemporary scenes in Prayer for the French Republic on Broadway than I was off.
I think my issue with Prayer for the French Republic with Broadway, so when I saw it off Broadway, you know, we were still, it was the season we all were coming back from COVID, so everyone was sort of just like on tiptoes and not really knowing what anything was going to be. And my friend took me and we're like, oh God, Joshua Harmon wrote an over 3 hour play. What's that going to be like? Because I like Josh Harmon. I'm like, someone let that man write for 3.5 hours. And we sat there and we're like, oh, this is actually pretty engrossing and fun. And I'm like, the time's kind of flying by. So we were very pleased. And then when it moved to Broadway, first of all, half the cast is different. And I think some of the casting changes were for the weaker.
I agree.
And yeah. And also just being on a larger stage with a bit more distance, I just could sense a bit more air in the play. And, you know, I think could have been tighter. And, you know, Stereophonic has a moment or two where it dips a little bit, but only moments. And even the dips, they're not unengrossing. It's just like, this isn't as, like, gripping as 5 minutes ago, but I'm still invested. But Shark is Broken, I'm going to let you have that. I think I'm going to let you have that enjoyment, and I'll have you put that in your this is what I want, because you're allowed. You're allowed. It's your opinion.
If Mother Play does get into the actual five, what do you think doesn't make it?
I think it would replace either Mary Jane or Patriots. I see a world where Patriots could actually divide a lot of people, because it's very cold, in my opinion. It's an important subject matter, and it does a lot of things objectively well, but like, it could be a prima facie situation where everyone goes, you know, the performance, great, the production, great, less thrilled by the writing. And so I could see that happening with Patriots, and I could see people with Mary Jane nominating Rachel, but not the play. Yeah. Especially, you know, Enemy of the People, I think, is a big contender for revival, and that's another Amy thing. So
have you seen Mary Jane yet?
I see that Tuesday, which I realize is actually their opening night, but a lot of shows in April right now are doing this weird thing where they do like a gala opening and then the day that the reviews come out. So I don't know if I'm going to like the actual opening or if it's just the day the reviews come out.
Right. I'm not sure. But I will say about Mary Jane, for me, I think that was the play that of all the things I've seen in 2024, which is almost 100 shows at this point, I really need a vacation, was the show that impacted me sort of emotionally the most. And I think that was partly, I can plug my nonprofit later at the end, but I work with kids with serious illnesses. This is a play about a mother dealing with the challenges of raising a toddler with chronic illness. And for me, it didn't feel heavy, because I know so many people who are living in really similar situations, and all the relationships were incredibly familiar to me, but I've heard a lot of people describe the play as kind of relentlessly heavy, but also inaccessible to them in a sense. And I think that the, while people will respect sort of the artistry of it, I think the actual like thematic elements may not resonate with everyone sort of equally.
Yeah. Which is, that's a shame. I never can get behind people who go, well, I can't relate because I've never had to deal with that. I'm like, well, empathy is a thing, you know.
I think it's more that people find it really distressing because they can't necessarily connect to the experience of sort of living with it or living within it. And so it just feels hard and therefore like overwhelmingly distressing.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I know when Day and the Death of Joe Egg premiered bothered a lot of American audiences, and eventually over time they kind of came to appreciate it. And that's a play that is more stylized and uses a lot more humor, I'm assuming, than Mary Jane, but it's a similar subject matter. You know, it's two parents dealing with a child who has a debilitating illness and sort of how they deal with it. And yeah, with Mary Jane, it might just be with some distance and some time people appreciate it more and acknowledge the good that it is. But that's a future that I have to get to at some point. So that's our play category. I am going to do best actress in a musical.
Great.
I am going to predict for best actress in a musical, Kelly O'Hara for Days of Wine and Roses, Marianne Plunkett for The Notebook, Malia Joy Moon for Hell's Kitchen, Gail Rankin, Cabaret, and Shayna Taub for Suffs. The five I would want to do. Now, I see Cabaret on Wednesday, so I don't know about Gail, but I do like Gail as an actress. The five I would want to do are Kelly O'Hara, Days of Wine and Roses, Marianne Plunkett, The Notebook, Ariel Jacobs, Here Lies Love, Izzy Michaela, Water for Elephants, and Malia Joy Moon for Hell's Kitchen. Those would be the five I would want to do. I have to wait until I see Gail to make that final decision.
Okay. I have the same five prediction.
Mm-hmm.
I think that feels like pretty sturdy to me.
Yeah.
I think Gail Rankin's performance could be sufficiently divisive to make it hard for her to win. Mm-hmm. But I think not sufficiently divisive for her to get a nomination. I think enough people will respond that she'll easily get nominated, but I think it's a pretty, I thought of the performance sort of as like a Rorschach test, where it's like, do you see a clear picture cohering, or do you see a lot of like ink blots that you're like, wow, a lot of has been like splattered at this and we're going to try to piece something together. And I think for me, it didn't really cohere into a performance. Like there are moments that were very sort of extraordinary and bold, I guess, for lack of a better word. But I didn't get the full character to cohere. And it kind of feels like a performance that would feel different from show to show, like night to night.
Probably, yeah. That's how I felt about Michelle Williams when she did the role. And it's sort of the
production, yeah.
Yeah, so the Sally Bowles I've seen live have been Brooke Shields in 2001, Michelle Williams, Emma Stone, and then eventually Gail in A Few Days. And then I've, of course, seen Liza in the movie, and I went to the library to watch Natasha Richardson. And, you know, Natasha is just still, even on a video in a library, I was like, this is the best Sally Bowles I've ever seen and probably will ever see. But that's a hard role because, you know, she's such a snowball of contradictions, and some actresses who are very brilliant have a hard time making the contradictions all seem like part of a unit. They just sort of, it's, they'll play certain facets really well, but they won't connect them. And I can imagine that a Gail in a production like this one would be divisive. Who would be the five that you would want?
Yeah, so my five are Kelly O'Hara. I really did feel was one of the best musical theater performances I've ever seen, and I saw that once at the Atlantic and twice on Broadway, and it felt like it grew every time. And then I really loved, as I wrote in my review, I don't know if anyone else was quite as ecstatic, I thought Nichelle Lewis was phenomenal in The Wiz, particularly vocally, but I also thought the characterization was lovely. So I would have her, Malia Joy Moon, Marianne Plunkett, Shayna Taub. So basically just subbing out Nichelle Lewis for Gail Rankin from my predictions.
Yeah. I have not seen The Wiz. The one thing that everyone agrees on is that vocally it's great. I have not heard great things about the show itself, nor even the performances. But, you know, Dorothy is a role that's difficult to really make pop because you are the reactionary glue to everyone else's personality. And if you can make that endearing and magnetic, that's, in my opinion, that is not only a successful performance, but an extraordinary achievement.
Yeah, I did think that Amber Ruffin's book made some effort to make Dorothy have more sort of distinguishable character traits.
Mm-hmm.
I think, to me, I just left that show being like, what an incredible performer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Tony nominators will probably be on
if
that.
Listen, if they didn't feel that way about Stephanie Mills in 1975, no offense to Nichelle, I don't think they're going to feel that way.
I did like Ariel Jacobs, but I didn't totally feel like the arc.
For me, I have Ariel as my five wants just because there are three performances here that I am just so locked in with. One is Kelly, who is giving, in my opinion, her greatest performance to date. I am very mixed on the show itself, but I am full blown. Her and Brian were giving two extraordinary performances in that show. Malia, you know, I have issues with Hell's Kitchen, and I'll talk about that later, but Malia and Keisha Lewis are also giving phenomenal performances. And then Marianne Plunkett, in my opinion, is giving the best acting in a musical right now on Broadway. Ariel, I loved in the first half of Here Lies Love.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that.
Yeah, when she's young, when she's innocent, as she's starting to get a little more hardened, she's good. It's the it's the last third of the show. And it's not even that she's bad. It's just that she couldn't really command that third act of the show in the way that I can only assume Ruthie Ann Miles did. She didn't have
she
didn't have that womanly gravitas at the end. And part of it is that she is such a petite ingenue in a massive theater. I'm like, it's not your fault. You're 1,000th the size of this playing space. Like you're a Disney princess.
I will say, I thought Mackenzie Kurtz was one of the nicer parts of The Heart of Rock. I thought her performance was perfectly successful within what she was given to do.
She was fine. I will get to Heart of Rock and Roll in my wants later. I think she was fine. Again, similar to Nichelle and The Wiz, her part is she and Corey are very much the glue of that show in terms of, you know, everyone else kind of gets to be big and they kind of have to be the endearing leads. She puts a bit more like quirkiness into it than Corey Cott does. And watching it, this is the director in me. There were moments where I was like, if we cut these two quirks, that third quirk will pop. So like, cut those two moments. I call them Annalie Ashford-isms. Like, cut these two, like, and that third one's going to do really well.
Right.
But that's a director coming in and being like, hey, Mackenzie, this is what I'm seeing from the house. Because she's doing what she's doing because she can't see the whole picture.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, but I hear you. She does a good job. Okay. Give us another one, Dan.
Since we're here, let's do leading actor in a musical. But can I take this opportunity to do a very brief rant about gendered categories? And mm-hmm. my proposed solution to them that I've like mapped out at various points is, and I'm curious to know what you think of this, is splitting acting categories by new work and revival with an all gender category.
Interesting.
Because to me, obviously, maybe not obvious to everyone, but to me, obviously, there's no distinction between a male performer and a female performer preparing a role or performing a role, but mm-hmm. there is some not always identical but or consistent but some real difference between preparing a role that is brand new and you're collaborating with the writers and a role that is a revival of a role that's been played in the past. Mm-hmm. And if you sort of map it out, it's kind of the same people just in different competitions, which I think could potentially be even more interesting.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the tricky thing with me with art is every person will have a different perspective of, you know, what makes it distinguishable from each other. And I like that proposal. I'm sure there are like 20 listeners right now who are like, I actually disagree with that proposal.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, it's one of the things where like, you're not going to please everybody. So yeah. I would love to try that out. I would love to try mine out where it's just performers that I like. And I don't care if you're a man, woman, lead, feature, whatever. I'm like, these are the performances of the year from the people I like. And if you are not in there, it's because I don't like you. And you need to take that personally.
I think
And...
that could work as well. But it
All right,
just
so with that aside, your rant, you know, being heard, actor in a musical, give me your five predictions and your five
moving
wants.
on. I have my my four sure three are Brian D'Arcy James, Days of Wine and Roses, Jonathan Groff and Marley, Eddie Redmayne and Cabaret, and then I have Brody Grant, The Outsiders, and Ricky Ubeda for Illinois, who I guess we still need to find out where he's going. But
Yeah.
Feels like a lead to me.
Interesting. Okay. I had Ricky considered for featured with Ben Tyler Cook, but I haven't seen the show yet. I see it. I have a double feature Wednesday. I have Cabaret at 2 and Illinois at 8 on the 25th. And when I tell you that, I'm pretty sure I'm going to die afterwards. Like, I think it's just going to be so much theater that my body's going to be like,
just because there's the extra hour and then the show is like 3 hours, but it's just like
is long.
A very full experience.
Yeah. Okay, so Ricky Ubeda. Interesting, interesting. And then your five wants.
My five wants are Brian D'Arcy James, Jonathan Groff, Brody Grant, Ricky Ubeda, and then I'm thinking, I don't know what reaction you'll have. I don't know if he belongs in this category, but I love Justin Guarini in Once Upon a One More Time. And it felt like a featured performance, but since he was labeled, categorized as lead, I wanted to include him herein. But I did, I mean, I don't know if I loved, but I really respected Chip Zion's performance a lot in Harmony as well. And Casey Likes, when I went back to the future, was much more impressed by. So,
My five predictions are obviously the three locks, Eddie, Jay Groff, and Brian. I'm also going to now put in Brody Grant for The Outsiders, which I didn't do last time. And I'm going to say Ali for Tommy. Those are my five predictions. My five wants are Eddie, Jonathan, Brian, Dorian Harewood for The Notebook, and Justin Guarini for Once Upon a One More Time.
Wow.
A show that I hated.
I know you did. As
But he and Jennifer Simard were the two people I watched. I was like, you understand the assignment and you're doing it well.
I also loved Aisha Jackson in that show as well.
She was good. I thought her role for me was a problem because that was a case for me of a charismatic and talented performer given a role that was not a nothing burger, but just like a confusing role. Because she changed perspectives every scene. And I was like, she was good. Justin, at the very least, Justin, his role, well, I thought it was underwritten. There was a very clear vision for it. And that probably helped him deliver his performance. But also he just ate. And Samard ate, even though they gave her character like a very weird about face in the last 5 minutes. And I was like, okay, no, some people just suck. You don't have to make it like everyone's great if you give them a chance. Like, no, some people are awful.
To be fair, I don't feel like I couldn't fully summarize the plot of that show, but I enjoyed it very much.
Mm-hmm.
Moment.
You're allowed. Listen, I know many a gay who, after I wrote my review for it, flooded my DMs and they were like, "Britney died for our sins, and you need to love this show." And I said, I wasn't aware that was part of the gay Bible, but okay.
I did not feel like I was that familiar with Britney Spears' entire body of work going in. I mean, obviously some of them, but I felt like it fully convinced me. I don't know, of the theatrical potential. And I think there is
a good idea in there. I did not like the execution is the thing.
I do appreciate with Once Upon a One More Time the jukebox musicals that rewrite lyrics to fit their own silly context. I don't know if you saw or heard about the Clueless musical that the new group did like 2018 maybe, which significantly rewrote all of the lyrics from the 90s songs it was parodying, and I thought that was a smarter way to go than trying to like force lyrics to fit context that don't
yeah work. Well, I think it's a fun idea. You have to I don't know, it's a double-edged sword because there are some people, because they know the lyrics to the original songs, get mad when they hear the new words, but then I think if your tone is correct, people can find it a fun device. Because I remember
if it's
something
done
with
well, sure.
Yeah, with Clueless, the thing that people kept harping on was the what if God was one of us became what if Cher had no trust fund. And everyone was like, what the fuck is this bullshit? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't get to see it, but I was like, I don't know. I think in the right context, that could be funny.
Yeah, I think I found that production sufficiently self-awarely serious, silly, that it was effective for me. But
yeah. Okay, let's go into the plays. I'm going to do best direction of a play.
Great.
My five predictions are Daniel Auchin for Stereophonic. How do you say Lila's last name?
Neugebauer?
Neugebauer. Lila Neugebauer for Appropriate. Whitney White for Jaja's African Hair Braiding. Sam Gold for Enemy of the People. And Rupert Gould for Patriots. Those are going to be my five predictions. Again, having not seen Mother Player Mary Jane yet, just on a... I like Anne Kaufman, and I hope that Mary Jane is good. I would like to see her get nominated. And if that were to happen, I would maybe replace Rupert Gould with her. But that's just my five predictions are actually kind of my five wants, I've realized. But that's just me. What about you?
So my five predictions are Daniel Auchin, Stereophonic, Rupert Gould, Patriots, Lila Neugebauer, Appropriate, and then Kenny Leon for Pearly Victorious and Whitney White for Jaja's African Hair Braiding.
You're saying.
I was going to say I think the only difference was Sam Gold versus Kenny Leon, and I like Sam Gold's direction better, but I think Kenny Leon, the response to Pearly Victorious, whether or not it should have, seemed to center very much around his work on it.
Yeah. I liked both of those shows equally. For different reasons. I think my issue with Kenny Leon's direction with Pearly Victorious is I don't find him to be a very inventive stager, which a director doesn't always have to be. Like, he's really good at keeping the tone of a show, make sure everyone in the cast is on the same page. Like, that's his bread and butter, is casting really well and making sure everyone is on the, you know, same tone. But for a show that requires a good deal of farce, I found his work with the farce to be kind of lacking. And that was my only real big caveat with Pearly Victorious, because I loved everything else about it. So that's why he's not in my five wants, but I also think he's sort of my outlier of what could get in, because he's also very well liked, and Pearly was very well liked, and we'll see.
Yeah, he's not in my five wants either. So in that slot, I have Anne Kaufman for Mary Jane, and then I have Stereophonic, Patriots, Appropriate, Jaja's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Cromer also could possibly get in for Prayer, just because Tony nominators love a turntable, and any work that's done on a turntable, they're like, there you go. And listen, I love me a good turntable, but it's like kind of comical how there's always one turntable a year.
And Moritz von Stulpnagel should be in contention.
That surprise turntable for that, I need that.
That turned.
Yeah, I call as my friend and I call it the Teresa Rebeck, and they put in quotation marks play. It's that felt like an overlong pilot than an actual play. Yeah. But I digress. Okay, so Dan, do you want to do another category?
Let's do orchestrations, my favorite category.
Yeah, you had said this in our pre-talk that you're like, I've got a whole thing about orchestrations I want to talk about. And I said, girl, you go off.
Okay, so here's my orchestration thing, is that I think, as someone who's actually dabbled in orchestrations a little bit, I think that people, including me sometimes, find it incredibly difficult on a first hearing of a show to know what they're listening for, if they know what orchestrations are, because orchestrations are never separate from score, in that any moment you're hearing score, you're also hearing orchestrations, and you're also hearing sound design. So knowing the difference between, I like the music, I can hear the music clearly, and someone has decided what instruments should play, what notes, and perhaps written additional counterpoint or assigned specific melodic lines to different instruments to further the story, is a really specific analysis that's hard to do while also evaluating those other things. So my feeling is that I don't really know what the solution is, but I think orchestrations is kind of going to always be a mix of score and sound design for most folks that don't have sort of intimate knowledge of how orchestration actually works.
Well, yeah, I think that's why in the past a recurring theme has been, of the nominees for orchestrations, like 3 out of 5 are a best score nominee, and then 2 tend to be revivals, if the revivals are like very blatantly different from the original, right. You know, and that's why I'm trying to think of like the last time a show got nominated for orchestrations that wasn't nominated for score or revival, like, and not including Girl from the North Country again, because that was a very clear, like, these are Bob Dylan songs that were making like 1920s.
I think it's really easy when the like instrumentation choices are distinct, or when there's just something sort of like big and symphonic, or, but I think the actual sort of artist, and it's also sometimes from show to show, what an orchestrator's doing versus what an arranger's doing versus what the composer's doing can vary so much. And there's really no way to know unless you ask the people working on it who did what.
Exactly.
Because the music team can sort of, those roles can be kind of over, like Adam Gettle orchestrates his own music as he composes bar by bar, mm-hmm. which is very different than sort of what happened on Hell's Kitchen. So like,
yeah,
I think it's the category that I feel sort of craft-wise particularly connected to, but also sort of most frustrated by the sort of general approach to evaluating, or sort of the challenge.
It's very tricky. I mean, there's some orchestrations that I think are incredible that were never nominated, partly because, you know, there weren't enough slots, but, you know, again, sometimes nominators just go with like, oh, these three revivals that are very clearly different from the original, nominate them, and like our one score nominee, there you go. So like the La Chiusa Wild Party was not nominated for orchestrations, and those orchestrations are fucking fire, and it's like insane to me that they wouldn't get recognized.
Yeah, and I think also sometimes people can think scores are better than they are because of the orchestrations being great.
Yeah.
There are so many shows this year, new scores, where the orchestrators were working really hard to make the scores sound good.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of across the board, I feel like many of the new scores, the orchestrations were stronger than the scores.
Yeah, there are a couple of scores this year that I would like give a gentleman's like 7. Which is me being like, you know, it's more of a 6, but I'm being generous. And I think part of that is also because, as you said, the orchestrations really do help them. But yeah, there hasn't been a score this year where I'm like, oh yeah, this is the winner. Outside, well, no, that's not true. I do have one, but it's a very specific pick. And we'll get to that when we get to score. So orchestrations, give me your 5 predictions and the 5 wants.
My 5 predict, and I'll just slightly annotate them with why I think they'll be selected. Illinois, I think, feels like we took this album and made it an orchestra on stage. Mm-hmm. That feels like it'll happen for orchestrations. Days of Wine and Roses has a really distinctive orchestration, and also sounds like the sound design I thought was fantastic. I think that'll get nominated. It's also Adam Gettle did his own, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think Hell's Kitchen, of sort of all the jukeboxes in, or I guess there's not that many, but of the shows of that, I guess there are a few. And the shows in that ilk, I think they're sort of the most significantly sort of transformative orchestrations. Suffs, I think, are just really great. Michael Sterriman, who did Sun in the Park with George, legendary orchestrator. I think that'll get recognized along with the score. And then I think my 5th pick for prediction is The Notebook, because it sort of has that sort of fluttery strings experience that I think makes Ingrid Michaelson's song sound more theatrical than they are. And I think contributes, and I mean, I don't know how much people will really think that deeply about it, but I feel like contributes to the sound of the score being, having some level of variety to it. Yeah. So those are my predictions.
So I think, I say this because I think Days of Wine and Roses, Notebook, Suffs, and The Outsiders will all be nominated for score.
Yeah.
And then I've got a 5th one that I'll get to when we get to actual score. But with that in mind, you know, again, yeah, I think 3 out of those 4 are definite orchestration nominees. Suffs, obviously. I don't think I said this last time, but I'm pretty sure now Days of Wine and Roses will sort of get the Bridges treatment, where it's score, performances, and orchestrations will be their nominations. And part of it is that it is Gettle. It is also a very musical score and very intricate, and you can get a sense of the orchestrations. It also helps that Days of Wine and Roses' cast album is out and has been out, so people can listen to it.
Yeah, I think that does make a huge difference. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah,
having a cast album, the Notebook as well.
Yes, it will help The Notebook. And I agree with you about Suffs. I think Michael Sarabin, being the giant in the community he is, I don't love the orchestrations and Suffs. Like, I didn't feel much about them, but it is going to be a very big competitor in the score category. And so I think that will help Michael's chances in orchestrations. Also, I don't know if Michael's actually ever won. If he's won, he's won like with a collaboration.
Maybe, I'm not sure.
Maybe he won for Kiss Me, Kate. I don't know. Or did Bruce Coughlin do Kiss Me, Kate? I don't know. I'm going to look this up as I continue talking. Yeah. I agree with you about Illinois, and we'll see about Hell's Kitchen. Now that Hell's Kitchen is open to strong reviews, I think that they have a good shot at a lot of nominations that I didn't think they had a shot with 3 days ago. And reviews don't always equal Tony Love. Again, because, you know, it's different people. But what I've said in the past is sometimes really strong reviews gives Tony nominators permission to vote for the shows that they like that they're not sure how the community is feeling about. You know, Mamma Mia coming out and being a big hit, as well as surprisingly getting really strong reviews. Nominators like, oh, great, I had the best time of that show. I'm so happy to nominate it for book and musical and actress and not feel bad about it.
Right.
So I think that's something that Hell's Kitchen might benefit from this year. So I said Days of Wine and Roses, Suffs, The Notebook, Illinois, and I'm going to say Outsiders with the caveat of Hell's Kitchen. My wants are Days of Wine and Roses, Illinois, The Outsiders. I don't like the score, but I like the orchestrations, Water for Elephants, and then I'm leaving my fifth one blank.
I have 5 + 2 extra, so you can take one away. So my five wants are Days of Wine and Roses, Harmony. When I listened to the cast album, which came out before the show opened on Broadway, I was like, these are glorious orchestrations. This is going to win. And then I think it just gotten sort of subsumed. But I do think those orchestrations sound gorgeous. Illinois, Suffs, and then The Wiz, which replaced Harold Wheeler's original orchestrations, which are kind of one of my favorite things about the original score album, but in a really cool way that did it kind of its own thing, and except for cutting the tornado, which Harold Wheeler actually composed, I appreciated sort of what Joseph Joubert did there. Mm-hmm. And then I also thought back to my extras are the Back to the Future, the sort of sequences from the movie score, the sort of like get sort of a symphonic treatment that just sounds really cool accompanying the sort of car chase effect scenes. Mm-hmm. And I also thought the Great Gatsby orchestration was an example of an orchestration that helped the score sound better than it is.
Gatsby is a situation where I just think, because it's so big, Gatsby's going to divide people, but I don't think a lot of people. I think it's going to be more negative than positive, but the people who are positive about it are going to be very positive about it. And part of it is because it's such a big musical, so it's a big sound. Harmony, I have listened to the cast album once. I think it's fine. In the theater, the orchestrations did not sound like that. They sounded like a CD-ROM to me. It sounded thin as fuck. But because the cast album is well engineered, people might feel differently on re-listen.
I don't think that'll help it get a nomination, but it helps it win in my heart.
Yeah, sure. Back to the Future, I'll let you take that one. I want to say, I think that the arrangements on Heart of Rock and Roll are very clever. They wouldn't necessarily give them an orchestration nomination, but I watched it and I was like, they did some creative stuff with this music on a, you know, audible level. So I appreciated that for them. All right.
One final thing is that Jonathan Tunick did get some precursor nominations some off-Broadway nominations for the New York Theater Workshop production for Merrily last year. I think that I am skeptical of whether we should really consider these new orchestrations. They are new from the original Broadway production, but he did them like 12 years ago for the Meunier Chocolate Factory production, for a different revival somewhere. And I just feel like it doesn't really count. But
I forgot about Tunick. I think I have Tunick in there for Merrily right now as well. Merrily is weird because he is eligible, and I think that enough people will just be like, I don't care about the logistics, nominate it. And they are good orchestrations. I think it's 13 pieces. It sounds almost 20 to me, but that's also a sound design thing. You know, it's one less instrument than Funny Girl and sounds twice as full as Funny Girl was, because Funny Girl's 14 and sounded like 3.
I don't dispute that they're fantastic orchestrations. I just question whether we should count them. I think we should just give him like a lifetime achievement award.
Sure.
And say, like, here's, here you go.
Also, I looked it up. Michael Starobin won for Assassins, but that's his one win. It was 20 years ago, so he could win for Stuffs. Yeah. All right, next one, Dan.
Oh, it's me.
I think so. No, or did you pick orchestrations?
I think I picked orchestrations.
Oh, okay, so it's me then. I'm gonna do. No, I'm gonna hold off on that one because I love that category. I'm gonna do. Let's, you know what? Let's go down the line with design for play. So. Scenic, costume, lighting, sound design for play, all the way down. I'm going to do my predictions and followed by my wants, and then you can do the same and we can debate. So scenic design of a play, I am predicting appropriate, Patriots, Stereophonic, The Cottage, and probably Prayer for the French Republic. I would like to swap out Prayer for the French Republic for Grey House. And I would like to swap out actually The Cottage for Enemy of the People, because The Cottage had a very beautiful set that was not conducive to farce. It was, you know, Jason, which the play is not actually a farce, but Jason Alexander directed it like a farce. And there were only two doors and there were no levels. So while it was a beautiful set, I did not find that it helped that. But I found that Grey House was a very stunning set design that worked and enhanced the experience of the play. And Enemy of the People, while it is a simplistic set design, it's a very detailed oriented set design. So it's not grand, but everything about it works for the play, and everything about it's very specific. So those are my five nominations and my five wants. Costume design for a play, I think my predictions are Enemy of the People, Jaja's African Hair Braiding, Stereophonic, The Cottage, and probably Pearly Victorious. And honestly, those are also my five wants. I think those, I mean, again, that's one where I'm like, if Jaja can get in there for costume design, I'll be thrilled. And I think Stereophonic's costume design is incredible. Lighting design, I have Enemy of the People, I have Grey House, I have Patriots, I have Prayer, and I have Stereophonic. I think I would maybe swap out Patriots for Grey House. Did I say Grey House? As a prediction?
Yeah.
Okay. So then I guess I would swap out Patriots for Appropriate, which has a very it's a very nuanced set design half the time until it's not. And the way that they we were talking about this in the last prediction episode. The last 5 minutes of Appropriate alone is what's going to get it a set design nomination, but it also should get it a lighting design nomination. But
I agree with that.
And then sound design, obviously Stereophonic, which is, you know, they should just close up that category because, like, guys, you go home. You know this is going to Stereophonic. this play was written for best sound design of a play. I also have Appropriate in there. I have Patriots in there. I have Prayer for the French Republic in there, and I think I had Enemy of the People as my predictions, but I would maybe swap out Enemy of the People for Grey House, which has a very interesting sound design. So those are my down the lines.
Great. I don't know if I can remember everything you said.
But you don't have to remember anything. I don't remember a single thing I just said.
Scenic design, I have Patriots, Appropriate, Mary Jane, which I won't describe, but you'll experience. I have I Need That because people love it. That's my turntable of choice.
Yeah. They have a turntable house and people like that.
And Stereophonic. And then I would sub in, I would take out I Need That and Stereophonic, I guess I wrote down. And I really, something about the Doubt set just like made me feel like cozy. I don't know, the sort of, it turned and revealed things and I was like, oh, this is nicer than I thought it would be. Just sort of like the warmth of that exterior I liked. And then the Pearly Victorious set, I for some reason found it like really deeply moving at the end when the sort of rafters lifted up to become the church.
Totally.
I cried at the Mary Jane set for reasons I won't get into because I don't want to spoil it. But
I know that there is a reveal, but that I don't know what the reveal is. So I'm excited.
Sort of to me, it felt like a really specific thematic reveal that I found incredibly effective. So I think that will get in and should get in. But I do love Dots. So the appropriate ending made me great.
Didn't Dots do the Oh Mary set as well at the Lortel?
I think they did. And they also did You Will Get Sick at Roundabout off Broadway.
Yeah, with William Jackson Harper, right?
No, that was Primary Trust, I think you're thinking of. But
okay.
That was with Linda Lavin two seasons ago, and that had like a gorgeous set reveal at the end. Mm-hmm. And they also did Golden Shield at MTC, which I love that set. So Dots, I always just get excited when I see Dots in a playbill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did I not include the cottage for costume design as a prediction? That should have been in there.
I don't know. I have that in. Okay, so costume design, I have Jaja's, I have Stereophonic. Mother Play has really cool, lots of costumes, as you'll see. Mm-hmm. Cottage, and then I have Pearly. Mm-hmm. Those are my predictions. And then I would sub in, I just put in appropriate because I just feel like that play just feels so lived, those characters just feel so lived in to mm-hmm. me. And while costume is not the area that I feel most qualified to evaluate, I feel like that has to do with sort of their whole presentation. And then I would keep the rest of my picks in. So just subbing in appropriate for Pearly.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this last time as well. It's really difficult for nominators to understand the intricacies of modern costume design.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time a play or musical that took place like in modern day got nominated for a costume design. Right. It's there's like, what are you talking about? There are no corsets. There are no top hats. And so you like roll your eyes. All right. Lighting design.
Okay. Lighting design. I'm predicting Patriots, Enemy of the People, Prayer for the French Republic, Appropriate, and Grey House. And I would swap Enemy of the People for Stereophonic, which might actually be what happens. Did you have Stereophonic?
I have Stereophonic as a prediction as well as a want, because it's what I said on the last episode, and I'll say it again here. Stereophonic, for like the first 20 minutes, you'll watch and be like, Matt, why did you put in a lighting design nomination? It feels like you're just, you know, butt hungry for Stereophonic. But when they do their recordings, you understand. And I mean, just the lighting of the first scene of Act 2 alone, I was like, oh, this is, because it's not only is it gorgeous, but it's also very tense and very cold. And you're like, why am I feeling so stressed out right now? It's like, it's because of the lighting of how they light Sarah Pidgeon while she records that song.
And somehow the communication of like interior time of day, which should not look that different if you're inside a room without windows, like you can kind of feel what time of day it is throughout the play.
Totally.
Which is like sort of extra textual device, which is really cool. And I mean, subtle, but really powerful.
Yeah, you can totally tell when it's like 2 p.m. and when it's 1 a.m.
Right.
and as you said, like the whole thing takes place inside, so there should be no way of knowing, but and yet you do. All right, and then sound design.
Sound design, Stereophonic. I love the cicadas and Appropriate. Patriots, a lot of noises. Mother Play has a lot of sort of music throughout that I feel like could get a sound design nomination, and then Grey House. And then I would sub in Mary Jane for Mother Play. I feel like there's a lot of sort of offstage sound effects that are really evocative, that sort of help build the character in the story really well. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling they won't get recognized, but I recognize them.
Yeah, it could happen. I mean, what often happens with plays with sound design is if there is instrumental music played throughout, as you said, like with Mother Play, that tends to be an easy in for them for a sound design nomination. And I always find that to be kind of bull. You know, as you said, with Mary Jane, which I look forward to seeing, the fact that, like, you know, there's very intricate offstage sounds happening that are important to the play that also give you a sense of environment. That is great sound design. And the cicadas and Appropriate. And then the lighting and sound they do every time they open up the folder to see, or the book to see the photos. Like, it's all just very, very well done. I'm on board with all of those. Okay. Before we go to our next category, we need to take a quick break.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar. You're the nimble thread of the...
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back. Thank you for indulging me in that quick break, Dan.
I hear the Billy, I bet to differ with you in my head. Yeah,
that's how you see how the sausage gets made. Dan was like, wait, where's the sound?
Where's Patty?
Patty's nowhere to be found. Yeah,
no, Patty comes in to the podcast every episode.
Yeah, she Patty comes in after I record to loop in her.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She's too busy. She's like, I will not sit there for 3 hours while you do your podcast, and I will I will come in when you're done and post, and I will shout it. Yeah,
exactly.
That is how you do. Okay, so we did down the line designs for plays. So far we've done actress and actor in a musical. We've done director of a play, orchestrations. We have done best play. We have done all the designs for plays. Have we done any acting awards yet for plays?
We have not.
Why don't we do one of those? Want to pick one for us, Dan?
Let's do leading actor in a play.
Phenomenal. I think we're getting four here, right?
Because four, unless there's a tie. Yeah. So my picks are Jeremy Strong and Michael Stuhlbarg. I think are going to be duking it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Leslie Odom Jr. and Liev Schreiber, and I do not have Steve Carell.
You do not have Steve Carell. And is that also your four wants?
They're also my four wants.
I see Vanya on the fourth. I'm pretty sure it's the same. I think Liev is the most vulnerable here and could get knocked out by Steve just for the sheer star power of, oh, we've got Steve Carell, let's get him to the award ceremony. But and you can tell me more about Vanya. Like, the word I've heard on Steve is that he isn't bad. It's just that the production is kind of a mishmash.
I mean, I felt in a way the reason I don't have him here is that the part, at least as sort of figure it is in this production, doesn't really feel like the central role of the play, maybe not even sort of in the top three. And it really feels like Astrov and Sonia and maybe Yelena's play. And he seems more like peripheral until sort of critical scenes. And it feels like the performance doesn't really kind of lock in a way that kind of hooks you. And all of these other performances clearly feel central.
Yeah.
But I overall liked but didn't love the production. And I thought, as we'll get to, some of the performances in Featured were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that the performance is not sort of large enough just in terms of like stage time that I feel like nominators are going to feel obligated to go for the big name.
Sure. That can happen sometimes, which is a shame, where like due to whatever reason, a performance like is not really the focal point until the very end. And a lot of people will be like, well, you know, it took so long for me to recognize that. But I mean, I was very muted on this production of Doubt. I did not love it. And I hoped that I would. And I think Liev was fine, but I didn't love him. So it's part of the reason why I feel like he's the vulnerable one in this category. Also, just because, you know, I think Jeremy is very much our front runner, but having now seen Patriots, like, Michael is definitely giving him a run for his money, and he should not be coasting at all. Like, they both need to be bringing it all the time. And then Leslie was wonderful and Pearly, but it is closed. And, you know, if the rest of the season were weaker for this category, I think Leslie could take it. But because Jeremy and Michael are giving equally phenomenal performances in shows that are currently running. Leslie is just happy to be the third lock.
Yeah, to me it feels very clearly like a two-way race.
1000%.
Yeah,
that's fine. I accept that. I'm going to now do a harder one and do featured actor in a play.
Okay, yes, this is right.
And remember, everybody, I have not seen Vanya yet. I have not seen Mother play yet. So I'm going to go with my predictions and then my wants. And this is going to be very difficult. I have to put my boner for Stereophonic aside for a second because I'm going to be almost very guilty of doing in this category what I admonished people for predicting with Merrily for featured actress in a musical last time, which was when there are many possibilities, why would you give 3 out of 5 to one play or to one show?
The difference is that there are actually 3 really extraordinary performances.
Dan, I wasn't going to say it. I wasn't going to say
okay, well,
it. But like, there are 5 men in Stereophonic who all deserve to be recognized. And I would argue there's one woman in Merrily in that category who deserves to be recognized. But I didn't want
to
be mean
to them. We can get there when we get there.
We'll get there when we get there. So, featured actor in a play. My predictions at the moment are Corey Stoll for Appropriate, Eli Gelb for Stereophonic. I don't know what's going to happen with Will Keenan Patriots because he is above the title and was put in lead at the Olivier's, but I think he's going to be put in featured here. So I'm going to say Will Keen for Patriots. I feel like those are 3 pretty big locks. I'm going to say Will Brill for Stereophonic. And I'm going to say maybe Michael Esper for Appropriate. I feel like Appropriate and Stereophonic are going to sort of duke it out for multiple acting nominations. My wants. Here are my wants. I would like Will Keen for Patriots, Will Brill for Stereophonic, Tom Pasinka for Stereophonic, Eli Gelb for Stereophonic, and J.O. Sanders for Proudly Victorious. And I say this as someone who loved Corey Stoll in Appropriate. And if there's a possibility to get 6, I'm putting Corey Stoll in there as well. But I want people to remember how fucking good J.O. Sanders was in Proudly Victorious.
He was great. I'm surprised that, because I've heard on other podcasts you talk about my favorite performance in Proudly Victorious, which was Billie Jean Jones, who you did not.
Billie Jean Jones was wonderful in Proudly Victorious, and I very, very, very much want to dehydrate him. But I that was a role for me that were like, he did a wonderful job, but Jay was just sort of the impression of the featured. Like in shows like Proudly, it's like which character gets like the moment that everyone's going to remember. And I think everyone's just going to remember how that character, spoiler alert, dies and all of that. So I don't know. I mean, I was so gung-ho for Billy for Fat Ham last year. So
yeah,
whatever, if he were to get nominated, Dan, I would not
be
angry.
No, I yeah. Okay. So my predictions are a little different. So I have Corey Stoll for sure. I have Will Brill. I have William Jackson Harper for Uncle Vanya. Although Astrov has been ruled in lead in the past, I think that would be a silly thing to petition here because they already have a few girls. And then I have Michael Imperioli for Enemy of the People, and I have Jim Parsons for Mother Play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have Will Keen, and that's partly because I found the sort of I'm interested to see sort of what the critical reception is. I did not find that performance quite as sort of, because Michael Stuhlbarg's performance is so sort of overwhelming that I feel like everyone else kind of receded for me. So it didn't kind of stand out in the same way as somebody featured. But my wants would be, I loved William Jackson Harper and Uncle Vanya as I did in Primary Trust off Broadway last summer. I have Billy Eugene Jones for Proudly Victorious. I have Corey Stoll for Appropriate. And then I do have Michael Imperioli for Enemy of the People. And then my last one, which is not going to happen, but I'm putting it in my, is Graham Campbell for Appropriate, who played Reese, the son, I thought was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And was one of my favorite performances in that show.
He was great.
I think obviously has a smaller role, but I think the way that that character is sort of used throughout the play is brilliant on Bren Jacob Jenkins' part. And I thought the performance was fantastic. So I don't have any, I think just the Stereophonic people are hard.
Yeah. I think that's the problem with Stereophonic is like, And I mentioned this last time, there's a world in which very few of them actually get nominated because they're all so good, and nominators might have a tough time figuring out who. So like five might pick a certain group, and another five might pick another group. And then because that actually weakens their chances, other people will get in there.
Yeah.
Michael Imperioli in Enemy of the People, I liked him. I found him to be a little too Mr. Burnsy in a show where I found there was a lot more nuanced takes on characters. He was a little too grandstandy.
Yeah. I will say both of us saw the performance that was disrupted by climate
protesters.
And I feel like my take on his performance was like very impacted by that moment, where I thought that was part of the show for most of the
people there.
So I was like, wow. Like that interaction really stood out to me as a key moment.
So when people ask you about that day, about the performance, I tell everyone, because they're like, oh my god, what was it like? Did you know? I was like, honestly, the way that Michael acted, the way that Jeremy acted, and also just like the kind of director Sam Gold is, we all were like, it took 5 minutes for the entire audience to realize it wasn't part of the show.
Oh, because I fully did not. I ended up like the entire play. All of my notes, because I reviewed it, all of my notes for the second act were like trying to make sense of the directorial choice to have this intervention, and how I was like, but it kind of like completely shifts your perspective of everything, and like then I'm only thinking about that moment. And even I was like gaslighting myself, like the police came in, I was like, wow, Usher's dressed as police, ? And then at the end, the press reps were like waiting for the critics outside, and they were like, please come back, see it again. That wasn't supposed to happen. But Jesse Green also seemed to be, I was in a little huddle with Jesse Green and Naveen Kumar, was also from The Times and Washington Post. Jesse Green also seemed to be like, that seemed like part of the show.
Yeah. My I went with my Tony Witter friend, and we like went for a drink afterwards, and I had to text David, my guest from the last episode, be like, because he is a producer on it. Because Patrick was convinced that it was part of the show, like until after we left. And I had to show him a text from David being like, David said it's not part of the show.
Yeah. No, I mean, it did kind of work. And I give credit to the Adam Feldman in Time Out had a great interview with one of the protesters who really described the dramaturgical decision-making behind that moment and the way they did it. And I think it was kind of effective. Partly they were saying they wanted more people to get tickets for it and like engage with the story, which I thought was an interesting group, but it probably was effective. I don't know.
That is a Kevin Spacey and Usual Suspects twist of like, in reality, we really just want more people to see the show. I'm like, okay. I don't think people were not eager to see the show. Right. It already had $8 million advance in a climate where the most popular shows have like three.
Yeah. For best improv in a protest, I give Michael Imperioli.
Absolutely. Okay. And then, I'm down with that. Listen, I would like a world in which I can give a hug and a kiss to every single actor in Stereophonic. I think that ensemble, that and Jia Jia and Appropriate are like the three best acting ensembles of the year. I'm like, can you all just like duke it out in an orgy of acting? Because I would love to see that. Not sexual, like just like try to act out each other.
I do feel like Jia Jia's we'll get to featured actors, but I feel like that's a show that I'm like, there's no way that, especially if they're all voting individually and not in the same room, there's no way the nominators are going to coalesce around.
There's none of those women are getting nominated, and it saddens me, but it's the reality. Okay. So do we want to do featured actress, or do we want to do
featured actress?
Go for it.
I feel quite strongly that Celia Keenan-Bolger should be considered in lead for Mother Play. You can tell me later after you see what you think. And I don't know if, I think they're all below the title, so they'll have to petition people up. Mm-hmm. But obviously Jessica Lange will be considered in lead. I think Celia Keenan-Bolger should be too. I don't know. It would seem crazy to me, given sort of how she's positioned in the play as both sort of narrator and central character, not to be. But if she is in featured, she's definitely getting nominated. Carrie Young is definitely getting nominated. Mm-hmm. And then I have Natalie Gold for Appropriate, Sarah Pigeon for Stereophonic, and I think Frances Benamou for Prayer for the French Republic, who was kind of the like assumption early in the season, and then I feel like has sort of fallen out of conversation, but I think does have a good shot. And then if Celia Keenan-Bolger is not eligible here, I would throw in Juliana Canfield for Stereophonic as well. Mm-hmm. I think this could be a category where they could
totally. I think Kara and Sarah are absolute locks. There's just no way that they can't be. And then, again, the mother play of it all, we'll find out, because you're actually the second person to tell me that, I mean, about how strong Celia is in the play, and, you know, should be considered formidable in any of her categories. So if she is that good, I would probably put her in there. She is beloved. She gets nominated a lot.
Yeah.
I think that my final two, I'm going to say Natalie Gold for Appropriate. And I had it as a prediction last time. I'm going to put that aside today, and I'm going to say Juliana Canfield for Stereophonic. I think those are my five predictions now. What do I want, though? What I would like, Kara, Sarah, I want to say Victoria Pedretti for Enemy of the People, who I loved. Having not seen Mother play yet, I got to put that aside. And I'm going to also say, I'm going to do a six as well. I'm going to cheat and do six, because we've gotten six in the past. We got six for lead actor in a musical last year. I'm going to say six. I'm going to say Natalie Gold for Appropriate. And then I want to say my wants are Brittany Adebumola, I think is how you say your last name, from JoJo's African Hair Braiding, and Nana Mensah from JoJo's African Hair Braiding. Brittany is the character who has that wonderful monologue. She's the one who at the very beginning has to do the braids, the 12-hour braiding, yes. And she has that monologue about her childhood sweetheart who became like a big pop star, and her daughter, and she's going to send for her daughter. It's like so endearing and beautiful. The night I saw it got applause when the scene was over, which was like that was the only time in the play that there was applause after a scene. And I was like, yeah, you get it. And then Nana is the one who has the bad husband, who she wears like that red dress all the way down and has the braids with the beads at the front of her forehead. And she's friends with the one that no one likes, and they have like a very kind of toxic friendship. I thought her face, she has this ability to not be stone faced, but like it's not, you know, a like Carol Burnett expressive face. It's a very, she's very simple, but she pulls across so much with just sort of being that dropped in. And it's, I have vivid memories of her face. So she and Brittany are like the two from JoJo where I'm like, God, in a perfect world, they would get in, but it's not happening. Those are my wants, not my predictions.
Cool. I guess I didn't do my wants yet.
I did my wants and my predicts.
Okay. So I would have Celia Keenan-Bolger in. I thought she was fantastic. Natalie Gold, one of my favorite performances of the year. I really loved Alison Pill as Sonia and Uncle Vanya.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have her in. I think she has a shot, but unlikely. And then in Mary Jane, Susan Porfar, who plays two, she also did it in the sort of original production off Broadway several years ago, plays two roles, including this Hasidic mother in the hospital. It's really just like an extraordinary scene. And then from JoJo's, I would have Zenzi Williams, who plays B, the mean one, who sort of has like the biggest arc in the play.
Yeah.
Which I think speaks to the difficulty of singling out a performance for this. And I guess if I was putting in six, I obviously Carrie Young was great, but I feel like she's gotten, and I'd love for her to actually win, because it's been enough years. But actually my favorite Carrie Young performance ever was the 12th Night at Classical Theater in Harlem and two summers ago, was phenomenal as Viola.
I wish I had seen that. I'd heard such amazing things about it.
Good. And just let her kind of shine and star and do everything.
His heart stopped beating, didn't it? That certain moments of this season live rent-free in my head now. His heart stopped beating, didn't it? And the way she walked in those shoes.
Right.
It's like lives rent-free. Brittany's monologue in JoJo lives free in my head. Natalie Gold just shouting at everyone, just living rent-free in my head. And also just Corey Stoll being like, what did he say? When he just shouts at Elle Fanning, he's like, aren't you Native American or something? Like, he's talking about your people. She's like, what do you mean? He goes, aren't you Native American? He goes, no, I'm white. He's like, why the fuck is your name River? It's so good.
I love that so much.
Yeah, that's great. Listen, we were talking about this in the last episode. Featured actress in a play is perhaps my favorite category this season, because there are so many performances that are just phenomenal. Yeah. And like, there are going to be five women who will not be recognized on the 30th. and I just have to be prepared for disappointment. You know?
I did really like Victoria Petretti. I love Zoe Kazan in Doubt. She's not a performer that I've really been drawn to in other performances, and thought she was fantastic in this. And April Mathis, who is a performer that I've seen in so many off-Broadway things,
mm-hmm.
I thought was great in Mary Jane as well. A really, really. And also, I do want to shout out Mia Katigbach in Uncle Vanya, who has a pretty small role, making her Broadway debut. She was the co-founder of the National Asian American Theater Company, and have seen her in so many shows over the years, and she is killing it in that. So
shout out to her.
Yeah.
I also want to say I mistook an actress in the last episode when we were doing Prayer for the French Republic. David mentioned Frances Benamou. I don't know how you say her last name. And I mistook her for Nancy Robinette when we were talking about that show. I thought he was referring to Nancy when he was like, that's my prediction because of like, she's got that speech at the end. So I thought he was talking about the speech that the great grandmother or the grandmother does about like, I beat the Nazis. He was talking about Frances as the daughter with her like 30-minute monologue.
A really long monologue, yes. Yeah,
which is... You know, I've heard people complain about that. And like, yes, it is very long. But like, part of the joke is just how long she goes. And as someone who does go on tangents, I'm like, I get it. Like, she's up her own butt. And I liked her in that show. But that's a hard character because there are going to be people who won't vote for her nomination because they don't like the character. And I'm like, yeah, which means she did a good job because that character is insufferable.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. There's one performance in Prayer that I feel very strongly about nominating, and I think we'll now get in, but we'll get to that.
Great.
So I picked featured actress, or you picked featured actress? I can't remember.
I think you did.
Okay. So you get to pick the next one.
Take us to best musical.
Oh, we're going to do best musical. Okay.
We're just going to.
Let's whip it out.
Yeah. Does that mean I go first? Or...
You go first, babe.
Okay, great. Okay. So. My three locks are Illinois, The Outsiders, Suffs. Based on the reviews and the vibe in the room, I think Hell's Kitchen gets in.
Yeah.
And that leaves a whole bunch vying for the fifth slot. And maybe this is partly just my heart, but I think I am putting Days of Wine and Roses in that spot.
Okay. And then what are your wants? Are those also your five wants?
They're not. My five wants are actually the top three. Yes. Actually, basically, yes. Instead of, okay, well, this is your prejudge me now. Instead of Hell's Kitchen, I would put in Once Upon a One More Time, which I just heartily enjoyed and think provides some comic relief to a pretty heavy season across some excellent shows.
Well, then you get to do that, and I get to do this. My predictions. Illinois, Suffs, Outsiders, agreed. Absolute locks. I think we've got two slots that there are a couple of shows vying for. Notebook, Water for Elephants, Hell's Kitchen, and Days of Wine and Roses. And also, for that matter, Here Lies Love, I think are all sort of swimming around those two slots. And it's like, okay, which one of us is going to eat the other one to get in there?
Yeah.
Because Here Lies Love and Days of Wine and Roses, both now closed, well reviewed, those two are still the best reviewed new musicals of the season.
Yeah.
And I will say, I know more people in the industry who liked Here Lies Love than liked Days of Wine and Roses. I think there was more admiration for Kelly and Brian than there was for the show. And I know the industry felt very let down that audiences didn't go to see Here Lies Love because people really liked that one. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it. So I'm going to say, ultimately, Hell's Kitchen, and I will say Notebook. I do think that there's actually more like for that show than people realize, again, in the industry. My wants, not having seen Illinois, I am going to say Illinois, just because I'm that bitch. Suffs and The Outsiders. I'm going to say my other two wants are Here Lies Love. And you said Once Upon a One More Time. I'm saying The Heart of Rock and Roll. So put that in your hat. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I think that Water for Elephants may be underestimated in terms of the contingent that really felt like, I think the people that loved it really did love it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how strong that population will be amongst the nominators.
So this is actually what makes the season so fascinating. There is no new musical this season that has everyone behind it, both critics and audiences and industry. You know, we've got our two best review musicals closed prematurely. And even though the industry, a lot of people in the industry, like both audiences didn't care for them. And then we have, you know, Outsiders, which got very positive buzz during previews after being kind of destroyed out of town. And then the reviews were not bad, but they were sort of like respectfully mixed. And then Suffs got positive, if not effusive, praise. Water for Elephants got an all over the map reception with the critics pick. And I know many people who hated Water for Elephants, and I know people who were pleasantly surprised. A few Tony voters who really enjoyed it. I've met Tony voters who hated The Notebook, and then I've met people in the community who were like, I thought that show was beautiful. And then Heart of Rock and Roll, a lot of us went out being like, that was more delightful than I expected it to be. We'll find out what the reviews are like. You know, Lempicka is that situation, and you know, we don't have to touch that with a 10-foot pole right now. And then Hell's Kitchen, I mean, I did not care for Hell's Kitchen off-Broadway, and the reviews were a little more mixed there. It's, I don't know. There's no show in that category where it's like, oh yeah, everyone's unified about this.
Except Illinois, I think, based on the Park Avenue Armory run, which can't imagine will be received any differently because it was 3 weeks ago or whatever.
Yeah, no, it was so close. But like, once it gets to Broadway, who knows what Broadway people say? Because
My sense is that audiences were as rapturously responsive as critics were. And I reviewed it and was pretty, I don't think it was, I mean, as not a dance person per se, it was not I think for me, in some ways, Outsiders and stuff made me more excited as a real musical theater, gritty score person. But Illinois kind of is perfect for what it's trying to do. And I haven't heard too many people not feel that way.
I've heard nothing but wonderful things about Illinois. The only caveats I've heard from some people are those who have very binary definitions of what a musical is.
Sure.
And so it's not them saying the show is bad so much as they're like, it's not totally musical. I'm like, is there live singing? Is there dance? Is it telling a story through both of those things? Is it a musical? I think that Illinois, Suffs, and Outsiders are absolute locks. And then the last two, we'll see. I agree with you. I think Water for Elephants has more support than people realize. I think Notebook is extremely divided, but it's similar to, you know, any show this season. Those that love it, and those that hate it, hate it. So it's like, well, which one has which side is 2% larger? Because it's just, you only need that 2%. Okay, let us do book and score.
Great.
For book, my predictions are Suffs, Outsiders, Water for Elephants, Hell's Kitchen, and Days of Wine and Roses. Those are my five predictions. My wants are Outsiders, Suffs, Notebook, Heart of Rock and Roll, and I'm leaving it at 4.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I thought this was a really bad year for books. So, you know, I can't bring myself to put in a 5th.
Yeah. My sense is that everyone who loved, I haven't heard too many people say Hell's Kitchen was great and I love the book. I've heard people say it was great despite the book. I don't know if you've heard.
I haven't heard anyone say that the book is good. But I also, I haven't spoken to anyone in person who's liked Hell's Kitchen. It's all been online people that I've read who've liked it. So my bubble is clearly very small.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Hell's Kitchen last week with someone who loved it and said, despite the book, I loved it. And I feel like it's a case of, which is, are always sort of interesting shows, is where everyone kind of observes the same thing. And it's kind of, what do you value most? For me, I'm like, yes, the singing blew my mind, but that doesn't clear the bar for me. And other people are like, great Alicia Keys concert. Why not?
Yeah.
So for me, my nomination predictions are Outsiders, Suffs, Notebook, Water for Elephant, Days of Wine and Roses. And then my wants would be Days of Wine and Roses, Outsiders, Suffs, and then Once Upon One More Time, since you're bringing it out of rock and roll.
Yeah.
And Harmony, I feel like there were lots of issues I had with it along the way, but I ultimately found it emotional at the end. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the sort of overall structural package worked for me. And then I'm curious about how people will approach Illinois, because it's obviously not a traditional book, but they did hire a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Jackie Salusbury, who's an awesome playwright, to really shape a story that feels as well structured as anything else this year.
I mean, ultimately, that is what a book is. It's right. It is the story and the structure.
Yeah.
People define it based on the dialogue. I'm like, well, no, it's also how the whole thing comes together. So yeah, if that were to happen, that would be the negging of the season that I would be so here for, because like, if it's a well done structured show, then fuck it. Yeah, do it. Harmony, I don't love the book. I will say it is a better book than some of the things we've gotten this spring. But again, it's hard for me to be like, well, you were better than these five, but I still didn't like you. My thing with Hell's Kitchen is, if they get nominated for musical, which I think at this point they will, but they don't get nominated for book, then that absolutely, in my opinion, cuts their chances of winning Best Musical, because so far, there has never been a Best Musical winner that wasn't nominated for Best Book if it was eligible. So like, keeping out Fosse or Amos Behaven, but Contact nominated for book. You know, when people were like, oh, it's down to Strange Loop and Six, I was like, no, it's down to Strange Loop and MJ, because Six didn't get nominated for Best Book.
Yeah, which I thought it should have, but whatever. But I
concur. New York got a Best Book nomination. Yes. I was like, get that shit out of here. Put that on the fire.
I will say, well, I'll let people judge The Great Gatsby book for itself. I interviewed Kate Carrigan on my podcast in after the Paper Mill production, and hearing her talk about it and then seeing the changes she made since that conversation, I think is really fascinating, because that book has changed the most drastically of anything this season, and or as far as I know.
I applaud her for that.
I would say most improved for sure.
I would also say, having not seen it at the public, but I appreciated all the reviews pointed this out, how improved Suffs was.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that was, I mean, yeah, I mean, I would say that the gap for me was a little, like, I appreciated it a lot at the public, and I feel like it was a lot of tightening and cutting, and obviously a lot of new songs, but I feel like Great Gatsby for me went from something that I was like, oh no, this misunderstands everything about this project, to being something that I thought, for me at least, like, basically worked and got a lot closer to sort of what I was looking for as an adaptation. I know that you felt differently coming into the Broadway production without that.
Well, I didn't see it at Paper Mill, so I have a very I had a very different entryway. But yes, I have a very different response to that musical. But to that show's, I mean, I didn't give them credit for the fact of, like, it's really difficult to write a musical about a bunch of narcissists where not a ton happens and the bad people get away with everything in the end. It's like, what? How do you make that into a musical? And ultimately their aim was like, well, let's like lighten up on the narcissism a bit. Let's give them a bit more inner life so we can write songs for them. And I'm like on paper, I'm like, absolutely, that's how you would do it. But you know, I've talked about American Psycho. It's like, how do you write a musical about people who have no inner thought, that it's just totally about,
I mean,
thought.
I felt like every time Nick left the stage, it was like, oh, now we're at risk of losing the sort of the narrative focus, obviously, because we lost our narrator. But there was basically no Nick narrator at Paper Mill, so
yeah,
there were a lot of scenes that I felt did have sort of the focal direction of the book
again, props to writers who take criticism into account and make changes, whether, you know, it's successful changes or not. I applaud that over people who fold their arms and go, no, you just didn't get what I was doing, and like, call it a day. Score. Let's get into score. This one's a little more fun for me. I'm going to say, for my score predictions, Days of Wine and Roses, Stereophonic, The Outsiders, Suffs, and The Notebook. My wants are Outsiders, Suffs, Stereophonic, Here Lies Love, and I'll keep the notebook. Those are my five wants and my five predictions.
Okay, my predictions are closer to you than my wants. So my predictions are Outsiders, Suffs, Stereophonic, Here Lies Love, Days of Wine and Roses. I'm going with two closed scores. Because I think that is a place to recognize Here Lies Love if it doesn't get in for...
Yeah.
Or Days of Wine and Roses if one of them doesn't get in for a musical. And then I have... My wants would be Days of Wine and Roses, Harmony, which I did like the score, The Outsider, Suffs, And then just looking at the list, I would have to go with How to Dance in Ohio as my fifth score. I don't really feel that Stereophonic works. I think the way that it works dramatically is David Ajmi and not the songs themselves. I mean, like, the songs are good, but I don't feel like I wouldn't consider, and obviously this is going to be something that a lot of people are wrestling with in the next two weeks, but I think it will get in. I don't think it should win.
And it's what I would vote for. I'll be honest. It's what I would vote for.
Because I feel like we'll see how long the album is, but it's not that many minutes of full different music. I think what's fascinating about the way that the music is used throughout the show is sort of how you hear it spliced and put together and pieced, and that feels like the playwright more than the.
I think that's a collaboration, because part of what makes certain moments exciting is watching the process of the songs getting made. And I think there's a lot of work that goes in there on the part of the songwriter, of having to do sort of the song as finished and then alternate versions of said song to get it to that point. And then also how those songs fit the era, fit the characters based off of who's writing it, who's collaborating on it. And I mean, the songs being good alone, I think, puts it above 85% of the score options here in this category. And then when you add everything else to it, I think it just makes it a very special case. And I'm very rarely going to say a play should get score over a musical. And if I had to pick something that wasn't Stereophonic, I would pick Suffs, which is probably the best musical theatery score of the season. And I don't love the score for Days of Wine and Roses, but it is very much a musical theater score doing a musical theater thing. I feel like a lot of scores in this category, even if I enjoyed them, are more about like setting a vibe than about introspection.
Yeah.
That's like how I feel about The Notebook, is like, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the music of that. But half the time, I'm like, this is more about atmosphere than it's about people.
Which is why I have Harmony and How to Dance in Ohio on there, because I feel like they, whether they're fully successful, are doing the thing that I respond to most in musical theater scores, which is trying to really write for characters' voices. And I don't think either of them are entirely successful, but I feel like the goals are aligned with what I am looking for.
I mean, she and Johnny have so much in common.
That is indeed a lyric.
You know that song, by the way? It's the beginning of that song is the same as the beginning of Hooked on a Feeling.
Is it?
And I mean, how I hear it is, because it's Johnny, we have so much in common. Johnny, don't you agree? And it's, I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me.
Only so many notes. Well, that's why orchestrators are so important, because
that's not me reading them for filth. That's not me dragging them. But my friend and I walked out and we were both like, why is that the one line that we both can remember after the show? Like, because it's not an uncatchy score. But we're like, why is that the one? And then we like got a block away and I went, oh shit, it's because it's Hooked on a Feeling.
Yeah.
It was just a very funny observation on our end. Listen, at least How to Dance in Ohio does not have the lyric, I may not be showing, but there's a baby growing, which is a lyric from Great Gatsby that fully took me out of my seat. And that's all I'm going to say today.
Great. Shall we onwards?
Let's move on. Yeah. Pick a category, babe.
Let's do choreography.
Fantastic. Now, I've spoken about this before. Sometimes choreography, people will go for most rather than best. And sometimes best equals, you know, not just creative, but where it's being pushed. But you have to take your own personal taste aside and go, okay, what are 25 noobs going to say about dance? So with that in mind, Dan, you noob, tell me about dance.
I have Hell's Kitchen, mm-hmm. The Great Gatsby, The Outsiders, Illinois, Water for Elephants, with I guess Tommy being the one that I feel like could substitute for Great Gatsby, maybe.
Yeah, I haven't seen Cabaret yet. I know that this production is very odd and many people don't like it, but those I know who have seen it have been very vocal about the choreography. So I feel like Cabaret and Tommy are two that definitely could get in there. My predictions for choreography right now are Illinois, which is obviously the front runner, Outsiders, Water for Elephants, because I feel like even those who aren't fans of the material of Water for Elephants can acknowledge that the staging of it, both Jessica Stone's direction and the choreography by that team, are very well done and maybe mask or work very hard to mask some of those issues. I'm going to put in Hell's Kitchen. And then my fifth slot, I'm going to put in Tommy as my prediction. My wants. Yo, you didn't do your wants. What are your five wants?
My wants are Illinois's Great Gatsby, Once Upon a One More Time, which I hope you can agree has really great choreography, maybe. The Outsiders and Water for Elephants.
Mm-hmm. My wants are Water for Elephants, Outsiders, Illinois's, Harmony, and Once Upon a One More Time. Those are my five wants.
Harmony, all I really remember is them like jumping around in a circle.
Yeah. Harmony does not have great choreography the entire time, but there were like four or five numbers in Harmony. Because Warren Carlyle's a choreographer for me where it's like when he's really good, he's really good. But I've also seen him kind of coast, or I've also seen him try to outdo himself, and it ends up sort of being not a mess, but like a little overblown. My issue with Hell's Kitchen is like there are four, and I love Camille A. Brown. I've been on that train since fucking Choir Boy, but my issue, actually since Once on This Island, but my issue with Hell's Kitchen is there are like four numbers where I go, fuck yes, this rocks. And then there are like another four numbers where I go, oh no, not only should there be no dance here right now, you're doing so much dance that I'm actually uncomfortable.
So much dance. Yeah, no, I mean, I do love her. I think the vocals are the performances and the vocals and the arrangements are more successful than the dance at masking the issues with the structural.
Well, yes. I mentioned it in the last prediction episode, but there may or may not be a certain funeral sequence that happens where someone gets out of their chair to start dancing. And I remember guffawing at the public. And that's not what you want during a funeral sequence.
Right.
You know,
you also don't want strange people who don't live in the building entering a private funeral without going through security. And I don't know how that character enters that room at that time.
Then making it about them.
Right. Well, I guess
I know they're dead, but I'm having feelings. So I'm going to lift up my arm and get out of my chair. And I'm like, this is not about you, Claudia. Okay. So that's choreography. Let's get into some more performances. Actually, we have to do, you know what we got to do? We got to do down the line design for musical, and then we got to get into the rest of the performances. Before we do that, Dan, guess what we have to take?
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
There it is. One more break, everybody.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we back. Okay. Yeah, because these episodes are hour long, we have to do two breaks in the middle. So let's go down the line with design.
Great.
Let's split this in half. We'll flip with scenic design and costume design and then lighting design and sound design. I'll do lighting design and sound design first, and then you can do scenic design and costume design first. How does that sound, kid?
Great. And yes.
Fantastic.
I'll just follow your lead.
Lighting design of a musical. My predictions are Cabaret, Illinois, Great Gatsby, Outsiders, and you know what? I'll say Back to the Future. I think those are my five predictions. My five wants are Water for Elephants, The Notebook, Merrily, Illinois, and Here Lies Love.
Cool. My predictions are Back to the Future, Outsiders, Great Gatsby, Tommy, and Cabaret. So mm-hmm. pretty. My wants are Merrily, as you had, I thought, gorgeous, effective. Back to the Future, Outsiders, Days of Wine and Roses, really loved The Lighting on Broadway, and Tommy, with an additional shout out for How to Dance in Ohio for having lighting that was deliberately accessible for neurodivergent audiences, which will never get recognized because it was deliberately not sort of dramatic lighting, but I think raises the question of like, best for whom?
Exactly, yeah.
I'll pose to the listeners and we can move on. Yeah, I thought the Merrily lighting sort of was perfect.
Yeah, I have been very open about how I like that this revival of Merrily. I don't think it's phenomenal. There are some choices that I don't agree with and choices that I question. But one of the things that I think is really beautiful is the lighting. I think it's really good about focus and time. And for a set that I understand the reason why the set is what the set is, I also find the set to be very limiting for all the things they're trying to do. And the lighting makes it work a lot better. I actually feel the same way about Tommy with its design. Like I do like the lighting in Tommy. It is obviously, you know, the polar opposite of How to Dance in Ohio, where it's like,
yeah,
not everyone can go into Tommy with that. But, you know, I found that the lighting helped focus the design a lot of that show. Sound design of a musical. My predictions are going to be Back to the Future, Cabaret, Tommy, The Outsiders, and Suffs. My want is Outsiders, Suffs, Merrily. Actually, no, I think Merrily will get a nomination as well. I don't know what it's going to kick out, so I don't remember what I just said, but my wants are Merrily, Suffs, Outsiders, Days of Wine and Roses, and Here Lies Love. Because a lot of my wants are shows where the design was a crisp balance of feeling like the music was surrounding you while still hearing every word of the lyrics.
Yeah.
And that's actually how I felt about Here Lies Love, which was a similar concept to Tommy of like, you're at a rock concert, but with Here Lies Love, I didn't feel assaulted by the sound and I could understand the words. Yep. Like Tommy is loud to the point where I was like, I don't know why you hate me. I don't know why you're mad at me right now.
Right. No, I do. I'm glad you have Days of Wine and Roses on your wants, because I feel like that sound design just made everything so, whatever you thought of the score, the music itself, I thought it made everything so crystalline. Okay. My predictions are pretty close. I have Back to the Future, Outsiders, Cabaret, Hell's Kitchen, and Tommy, which are three Gareth Owen nominations. I don't know if they have a control for that or if it just is what it is, but
yeah,
he had a good season. And then I have Here Lies Love, Back to the Future, Days of Wine and Roses, and Outsiders, and Once Upon One More Time as my sound wants.
There you go.
So
now you're up now for scenic design and costume design.
Scenic design in a musical. My predictions are Gatsby, Back to the Future, Cabaret, Hell's Kitchen, and Here Lies Love, some of which are assuming projections get included with scenic design. Yeah. And then my wants are Days of Wine and Roses, Merrily, I guess, Suffs, Back to the Future, and Gatsby, maybe Cabaret instead of Merrily, but I feel like that's more for the theater renovation than the stage itself.
Yeah. My predictions are Cabaret, Here Lies Love, Back to the Future, Great Gatsby, and Water for Elephants, with the possibility of Tommy replacing Water for Elephants for scenic design. My wants are Cabaret, Here Lies Love, Outsiders, Water for Elephants, and Gutenberg. No, I don't.
That reveal was... was cute.
That was a cute reveal, yeah. But what would be my fifth? I guess. Did I say Gatsby? No, I don't think I said Gatsby as a want. I'll put in Gatsby. The design for Gatsby is good. It's not as ornate as they're advertising. It's actually deceptively reliant on projections, which I'm not using.
Pretty cool projections.
Yeah, I'm not using it to like denigrate them. They use them well. But yeah, the advertising everyone's going with it is like, oh my God, we haven't had a Broadway musical be this elaborate in years. I'm like, it's actually pretty simple. It's a lot of flats and, you know, and like a table to come on with the paneling projecting a very detailed set, which is, again, that's actually very clever and something that Tommy does as well. And I think that Gatsby actually uses it better than Tommy, but it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm happy to nominate it for set if we all can just sort of understand that there, like, what you think is a literal set piece is not what's there.
Right.
Like, let's nominate what this is rather than like have a narrative.
Which I think is why there desperately needs to be a like video and projection category, because sort of deciding show by show where that goes is like, I think projection video was with sound for Jaja's or something because of like the TV.
Yeah. I mean, it's so tricky because like sometimes the projection is truly part of the scene design. Like it's so integral to what's going on. Like I thought it was very, not only smart, but the right thing to do to nominate Flying Over Sunset for set when they included the projections as part of that. I was like, the projections really help that set be the set, but not everyone's going to feel that way.
Yeah. Wow. Not a show I've thought about very recently. Okay.
How can you forget about Carmen Cusack standing on the lip of the Vivian Beaumont stage, holding the severed leg of her dead mom? That is something that will always stand with me. Similar to Eden Espinosa running off stage in a wedding gown, holding a baby. It's just, there are things that you just will always remember your divas doing. And that's one of them.
Well, I'm glad you already know that's a core memory. So costume design, I have predicting Gatsby, Cabaret, Water for Elephants, Notebook, and Merrily. Which could be all wrong. My wants are I feel like costume is where I have like no sense of knowing what other people are thinking. Days of Wine and Roses, loved Kelly O'Hara's outfits. Great Gatsby, Once Upon One More Time, thought cool Britney fairy tale things. Merrily and Cabaret. I mean, Merrily I think is similar to like Appropriate, where they're, I mean, I guess they're more obviously more period, but like where it's sort of not outlandish costumes, but where the so much characterization is happening
in
full sort of design package.
I think Merrily has a better shot at costumes than it does for set in terms of a nomination, because the costumes actually do the best job of all the design in the show to let you know what period you're in. And I would actually, and as you know, I think the opening scene of that Frank has some really fun LA 1979 party costumes. And then when we get into the 60s and act two, that helps a lot. But that could go either way, because I think nominators could be like, oh yeah, like Gussie stuff and, you know, the female ensemble stuff, like that's all fantastic. Or they'll be like, I don't know, Jonathan Groff wore the same black pants and white shirt the entire show. decline. So my predictions for costume design are Cabaret, Suffs, Great Gatsby, Water for Elephants, and Merrily. My wants are Water for Elephants, Great Gatsby, Suffs, Here Lies Love, and I haven't seen Cabaret yet, but I'm going to say Cabaret, if only for that clearly rock-hard red wig that Eddie Redmayne is wearing for the first half of the show. Every photo I see, I'm like, that is a helmet that he is wearing.
I wasn't in love with all the costume choices, especially for Sally, but they certainly are striking and you'll remember them.
There you go.
I have the Notebook in there as a prediction because I felt like it was a very important sort of storytelling device to have sort of the elements of their costumes that were matching across ages and also kind of did some period work too. I don't know if that'll get recognized, but
I mean, I don't know if they can get nominated for John Cordoza's abs, but if they can, then absolutely nominate the Notebook for costume design.
Colin Donnell and John Cordoza.
Yeah. I made that joke in the episode hasn't come out yet, but I made that joke when my guest David was like, I don't know, can Char Gisbrocken get nominated for set design? I was like, they can't nominate Colin Donnell's abs for set design, so no.
Great.
Yeah. Okay.
That is done.
So that is done. What we have left is featured actress and actor in a musical, director of a musical, revival, and then I think actress in a play and play revival. So actually not that many left. So any of those that you heard that you're like, I want to tackle?
Let's do Play Revival.
Play Revival. Easy peasy, beautiful cover girl. Enemy of the people, appropriate, pearly, victorious. And that's also my three wants.
Great. I have, those are my three predictions, but I would put doubt in instead of pearly victorious. Were it up to me.
Wow. Okay. Okay, racist.
I think that, I don't actually think that the play, I mean, I reviewed it back in the day, so you can, people can check out my review for more complete and up-to-date thoughts. But I feel like the play is not, itself is not that strong, and
yeah,
that the satire doesn't quite work as sharply as it wants to. And I haven't, I, to be honest, I haven't seen a production of Doubt before this one, and I haven't seen the movie either, so I may just be responding to the
play itself.
It being, well, I think, really good. But that is where, but certainly, I mean, I basically liked all of these revivals and would put Pearly in.
I agree. Doubt is the better play. I think Pearly Victorious is a slightly better play than you do, but I do think Doubt is the better play. I think Pearly Victorious was the better production. Doubt, you don't really need to see the movie of Doubt. It's every, other than Viola, it's a bit indulgent on the acting front. It's very, you know, everyone gets to kind of chew the scenery in freshman year scene study. And with the original production, everyone was a little odder, and not restraint, but like everyone was just boiling under the surface, and they would have moments where it would come out, but it wasn't like, so whereas this revival, I found it to be kind of tame. The movie is like, there's no one has any restraint. Everyone's just like coming out claws and fangs bare. So yeah, it's, I do think that this is an easy category though, especially as Vanya has not been the event that I wanted it to be
in our predictions. Which is fine. I feel like for me, I would award cast members for Burley, but maybe not.
Yeah. Oh, I also realized we didn't do musical revival. So with that in mind, revival of a musical, my predictions are Merrily, Cabaret, Tommy, The Wiz, My Wants, and You're Gonna Laugh at Me, Cabaret, Merrily, Tommy, Gutenberg.
I have The Wiz and Gutenberg flipped. So I'm predicting Gutenberg, but would want The Wiz.
So one of us is going to be happy on the 30th and one of us will not.
And message Spamalot, in which case we'll be wrong.
I didn't hate Spamalot. That's not my musical. And I think this production did not do anything to convince me. So
I went in feeling it was my musical and was disappointed, and just felt like I like grew up on that album, loved it all, and didn't laugh at anything except Leslie Rodriguez Kitzer and sometimes Michael Urie. And Gutenberg was not my musical. But I do think, I feel like of the three, there are definitely anti-Gutenbergers.
Oh yeah.
But I think there are also people that found the two of, I think that's a way to, since neither of them are going to get nominated, a way to recognize that event, special event, I guess.
Yeah, that is something that it's on my mind, because I enjoyed Gutenberg, but I did not love it. I think a lot more people who are anti-Gutenberg would be, if not necessarily pro-Gutenberg, Gutenberg neutral, if that show were 90 minutes no intermission as opposed to 2 hours with a 15-minute intermission. You know, just know what show you are and make it the tightest it can be. And I think the two of them are what makes that production work as well as it did. And everyone does love them. And that production was a financial success. And yes, actor and musical is too crowded for both of them to get in. So nominating the revival is a way of nominating them. Yeah. So I think that is a possibility.
And I will say, having seen now everything, that I think reports of Merrily's being in danger are greatly exaggerated.
I agree. I think, I don't think Merrily's losing revival anytime soon. I wanted Cabaret. I see Cabaret in a few days, but just the overall reports of this revival have not been the watch out Merrily. Even the people who have liked it have not been like, oh, Merrily's got something to worry about. They're like, I really enjoyed it. It's weird, but you know, it's not gonna be for everyone. Yeah. And that's what I expected. Just everything I've seen from London makes me groan. So I'm hoping that I, at the very least, walk out of Cabaret not hating it, because I have a friend in it. I enjoy a lot of people who have been cast in this version. So, like, can I just, like, walk out not being pissed? That'd be great.
Yeah, I don't think I was pissed. I was. The build up atmospherically is so great to a production that is basically like a fairly standard take on the show. So It's a lot of like, they've rebuilt, like, the theater is so physically disorienting in the way that Your Lies Love was too, but like even more so because it's like the entire theater and there's a mezzanine that was where the stage was, and you're like, how are there two audiences in this one theater? But then there's not really any clear sort of vision beyond we're in a very cool environment, which is great, and like the show gets to be the show, which is a really compelling work, obviously. And I didn't say like, oh, this is ruining Cabaret at any moments. I was just like, better or less great moments compared to other productions I've seen.
Yeah, Cabaret is objectively a phenomenal musical, one of the greatest ever made. So if you do a standard production of Cabaret, it's not going to be a bad time because the show is so great. Merrily is a lot more heavy lifting for a show that is fun.
I mean, the work of Merrily on the, well, we'll get to director, but I think I will say Cabaret did make me, I was thinking about Book and was like, this book is so good. What happened in the history of musical theater?
It's one of the best ever. Yeah. I think I'm happy with Merrily winning revival, as, again, as long as we're all open of like, they did not fix the show. The show still doesn't really work. We're all just more used to its flaws.
I don't know if I, for me, as someone who was quite negative about Merrily and found it so cold in the various productions I've seen previous, when I saw it in New York Theater Workshop, I like really was emotional at like every single song because it felt like suddenly warm in a way. So I don't know if it fixes it structurally, but I feel like it fixes it tonally for me because I care about the characters. And what I kind of ultimately felt was that it felt like, instead of just being like, well, we know they're doomed from the beginning, so like we're just gonna be miserable at the end, I felt like the ending, the last scene felt to me like, oh, that was one way that they could go, but like they now could make different choices, and like this could turn, we care enough about these people that like we're rooting for them to like not go that route. And I've never had that experience before, so it felt emotively to me just like a completely different show, even if I was still like, okay, some of these moments don't work and some of these,
and there are some directorial choices where I was, because Maria has done such phenomenal and detail-oriented work on that show that every now and then there'd be a moment where I was like, Maria, can I sit with you and ask you to maybe rethink this one moment? Because there'd be a 10-minute sequence where I'm like, oh yeah, like this is all well thought out and well planned, and then this one thing would happen, I'd be like, can we try that one again? But I digress. We'll get back to for that with director. Okay. Do you want to do director, or do you want to do featured actor, actress in a musical?
Let's do director since we're in the middle of the conversation.
Great. Direction of a musical. Give me your five predicts and your five wants. Okay.
My feeling is they're going to get three women in and say, let's go for five. So I have Rebecca Frecknell, Maria Friedman, Danya Taymor, Lee Silverman for Subs. I should have said Cabaret Merrily, Outsider Subs, Jessica Stone for Water for Elephants. Because I feel like once you're three in, we're like, let's make history.
Let's go five for five. Let's make history, baby.
So that's what I got for my predictions. I would nominate Maria Friedman, Lee Silverman, and Danya Taymor. And then I'd have Michael Greif for Days of Wine and Roses, which is my favorite of the Greif. And then I guess I have Warren Carlyle for Harmony, which obviously I liked more than you did, but I thought that staging held it together.
There are people who liked Harmony more than I did and people who hated it more than I did. And I didn't hate Harmony so much as I was just like, okay. So my five, I'm going to say, I think the three locks are Rebecca Frecknell for Cabaret, Maria Friedman for Merrily, who is obviously our front runner, Danya Taymor for Outsiders, just like, put them in the bank. They're there. They're in the savings. They're in our savings to be retrieved whenever we want. I think Lee Silverman now is probably very much, if not a lock, she is very close to one for Suffs, because that the critical response was such that even the critics that were mixed on it, like Jesse Green, it was a mixed positive where he was like, this is good, if not great. He goes, and I want to just make sure everyone understands that Lee Silverman and Shayna Taub have done incredible improvements since Off-Broadway, and that should be rewarded. Yeah. So that's something to be recommended. And then I think for my fifth, I'm sort of on the fence because I feel like it could be one of three. It could be Jessica Stone for Water for Elephants. It could be Michael Greif and Shelley Williams for The Notebook. And I feel like it also could be Des Makanoff for Tommy. I'm going to, or Justin Peck for Illinois. I'm going to put in Peck for Illinois just because if that show is as formidable as people want to say, they need a direction nominee. And so I'm going to give that to Justin. I haven't seen it yet, but I think, again, it's one of those things where, like, when it's your brainchild, people will.
Sure. I feel like, I mean, I think it would be very hard for anyone to articulate what is direction and what is choreography, since it's all choreography. And this book is sort of shared by him and Jackie Sibley's story in terms of, like, story.
Yeah.
And the book would be cool in that it would allow five female directors and one Michael Greif out of three Michael Greif. So that would sort of,
I just imagine, I imagine like a photo straight out of nine of the director nominees, and it's like little Michael Greif with his glasses surrounded by four
five women.
Yeah.
I think that could be a great,
that would be fun.
I think
with the Justin Peck with Illinois for me, it's more about flashes of like Bob Fosse with Danson or Susan Stroman with Contact, where it's when you are the director and the choreographer, and even though the whole thing is mostly dance, just the idea of like, it is your brainchild, you formed it, that's part of it. But also some people will not feel that way. I think the five that I would want would be Maria for Merrily, Lee Silverman for Suffs, Alex Timbers for Here Lies Love, Danya Taymor for The Outsiders, and Jessica Stone for Water for Elephants. Well, I described this to someone the other day where it's, I felt Jessica Stone now has sort of done a 1-2 punch, and the third punch is the one that's going to sort of be her all out brawl, because she, with Kimberly Akimbo, she goes, I've proven that I can help develop a really good musical that is well written, well structured, and I'm really good with actors and setting a tone. And with Water for Elephants, she's like, I've proven to you that I have an imagination and I can do some really cool stage pictures. My third show, watch me combine the two.
And, both, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I can't wait for the third one where it's, she's like,
you can find that if that show exists, I wish her luck.
But I think it exists, and I think it's out there for her because with Kimberly, the people I know who were maybe sort of iffy on her nomination were like, well, the staging is fine, but it's not impressive.
I thought her work on that was I know that you.
Same, yeah, I how I feel about that show. I'm so on board with her work on that show and that musical in general. And I think there is some impressive staging in Kimberly, but it's also not about being impressive. It's about everything else. And so Water for Elephants was sort of her being like, "Oh, you thought I can't do impressive pictures?" She's like, "I can do impressive pictures." She's like, "Let me give you a show that's not half as well written as Kimberly Akimbo, and I'm going to give you some fun pictures."
Well, I think it'd be a huge, I don't see any reason why there shouldn't be five female directors nominated. So
there absolutely can be, unless people are just really hard on Tommy, but because that can go either way. It can be the James Lapine with Into the Woods or the James Lapine of Falsettos, where it's, you did a lot. You did it before, but you've done some really cool stuff the second time, or rather like, we're impressed by what you did the second time around. Or it could be like with Falsettos. Yes, you did some new things, but I preferred what you did 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And that could happen. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right. Actress in a play.
Okay.
I have, as my predictions, Sarah Paulson, Appropriate. Rachel McAdams, Mary Jane. Jessica Lange, Mother Play. Betsy Item, Prayer for the French Republic. And Amy Ryan for Doubt. I think it's five for this one. I think we get to five.
Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I think there's only eight eligible unless Celia Cannon-Bulger is eligible.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. Okay then. So then if it's four, I'm going to take out Amy Ryan. I'm flipped between Amy Ryan and Betsy Item, who I think is the best performance in Prayer for the French Republic. And because I do think that will get a Best Play nomination, they will get at least one acting nomination. And I think it's her. She's the one. But Amy Ryan, there is the story of she came in and she saved the day. Right. And she did it so fast.
Did the show.
Yeah. And it's a great role.
I think, I think the one is Frances Benamou. And I think that's the item of everyone here except for the Grey House people is the least sort of clearly lead in like that really is an ensemble piece. So I mean, do you want to do your wants?
My wants were Sarah, Rachel, Betsy, and then since I haven't seen Mother play yet, I'm actually going to say Laura Bell for Cottage, who, you know, I didn't like that play, but it was seeing her on stage again was lovely and reminded me of like, oh, you're really good at this. You're really good at holding together a production, even if the elements aren't coming together. Yeah. But it's not happening at all. So, and I just wanted to give her props, especially because I have friends of the pod and listeners of the pod who all are like, but it could happen. I'm like, I don't want you to mistake that I didn't like her in the show. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. I would predict if no
Celia,
then Sarah Paulson, Jessica Lange, Rachel McAdams, Amy Ryan, I think, which would also be my wants. And then I would add Celia Keenan-Bolger as the fifth if
we get up to nine.
Although I guess it would be smarter for the play to put her in featured, even though it doesn't really make sense to me, because then they could get... But I did like Laurie Metcalf. Don't think that was a lead role, but I always appreciate Laurie Metcalf showing up, coming out of the basement and...
Oh, yeah. When have I ever disliked Laurie Metcalf? I couldn't tell you. So, yeah. You know.
Not going to happen, but...
not going to happen.
She was also there.
She was there. She commanded.
What's that?
I think all we have left is featured actor and actress in a musical.
Okay.
And I mean, it makes sense. These are the longest contender lists of all time. All right. So you pick the category. Which one are we doing?
Let's start with actress.
Actress. Okay. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel solid about mine, maybe. I think my two locks are Lindsay Mendez and Keisha Lewis for Hell's Kitchen. Then I have Shoshana Bean and Leslie Rodriguez Kritzer for Spamalot and Bebe Neuwirth for Cabaret, with Joy Woods as like the closest finisher for me, I think.
Are those your wants as well?
Actually, I would put Joy Woods instead of Bebe Neuwirth, although she was great. But otherwise, yes.
So my predictions, I have Lindsay, Bebe, and Keisha as absolute locks. I then have Nikki M. James for Sefs, with the possibility of exchanging that for Jen Colella. And then my fifth, I could see it being either Shoshana or I could see it being Joy. I don't think Leslie's going to get it. I just think that revival is going to kind of slip through a lot of people's fingers. But that's not to say that, you know, she shouldn't be thought of. My wants are... I'm going to be, you know, bitchy, and I'm going to keep Bebe, even though I haven't seen the show yet. Lindsay and Bebe, I'm going to keep as my wants. I'm going to say Jordan Tyson for The Notebook, who I really enjoyed. I thought she was so delightful in a role that could have been annoying AF, but I thought she was very endearing. I'm going to say Keisha Lewis for Hell's Kitchen. Absolutely want to keep her in there. That woman is fire. And Tamika Lawrence for Heart of Rock and Roll, because
I always love her. She needs a really, she wasn't getting the band back together too. She desperately needs a real show.
Yes. And in my opinion, absolutely stole the show and Carolina Change from everybody with a role that you don't really consider to be like a scene stealer. I love Dottie, but that's not one you're like, oh yeah, her. She got it. She's just an extraordinary talent. I also think, and we'll talk about this with featured actor as well, she and another cast member just nailed their assignments in a show that it's hard to do that kind of comedy and get away with it, of just like campy, cheeky, but still earnest and serving vocals.
Yeah, no, I always like her and everything. Yeah. I think her Suffs, I love the show. I love both of those performances. I think Jen Colella's works better for me just like as a role, because the show is trying so hard to convince us that Ida B. Wells deserves the second to last bow, and it's like he wasn't on stage anywhere near as much as.
Oh no, I think that the show undermines Nikki's chances a bit.
Yeah,
I think what Nikki does is really fantastic. Although she's not my favorite supporting performance. My favorite supporting performance is Ali Bonino, and I would like to have her be in the conversation. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I would also like to shout out Rachel Lockhart, who's in Illinois and has like the first featured story dance, who I thought was phenomenal at the Armory, who will definitely not get nominated, but just for the sake of the pod, I'm going to shout that out. Yeah, I mean, I think, and then so you, is Amber Iman anywhere in the conversation for you?
Not really. And I adore Amber. You know, I've mentioned this on Mike many times and on my video review for Lempicka. Like I have a vivid memory of Amber in Shuffle Along. There was a moment she has in Brooke Szczepanski's number, They Won't Remember You, where she literally has to embody like the soul and the legacy of Shuffle Along and like the Black experience behind a scrim, and she's just like wailing her heart out while Brooke Szczepanski just keeps singing They Won't Remember You, and it's burned on my brain forever. I find with Lempicka, because everyone is in a wildly different show, it's going to be difficult to like for some people to nominate anyone in it, because it's well, is it that I like you? Is it just that you're memorable? Are you actually good in the show? Or is it just that, like, you're throwing spaghetti at the wall? My favorite performance in Lempicka is actually Beth Level, who doesn't get a lot, but she completely nails what she's given.
Yeah.
And Amber also has the problem of like a character that is just designed to be like a manic pixie dream girl, and it's hard to make that a person. And she tries, she really does try, but like there are so many scenes where I'm like, oh, they're not giving you anything. They're just having you be like impish.
But Beth Level also only really needs to play one of the several tones in the show. And so whether the quality of the material is up to her standards or not, she's like, this is what I have to come and sell, and I will sell it. Whereas I feel a lot of the other performers are sort of trying to juggle too many balls at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's sort of not only the brilliance of Beth as a performer, but also the years of experience she's had in doing shows, honestly, shows that are worse than Lempicka, and knowing like, okay, this is what I'm in. And she can love the show or whatever, I don't know what her feelings are, but she understands I have to know who my character is, where my character lives, and do that consistently, and any changes my character makes has to be part of an arc, not due to like the new tone of a scene.
Right.
Yeah. So actor in a musical, I have, as my predictions, Daniel Radcliffe for Merrily, Stephen Skybell for Cabaret, Paul Alexander Nolan for Water for Elephants, Ben Tyler Cook for Illinois, just based off of what I'm hearing. And then, who did I have as my fifth one? I had... I had Joshua Boone for The Outsiders. My wants are Brent Comer for The Outsiders, as Daryl, who I thought was just absolutely fantastic. Daniel, Stephen, Paul, and my fifth would be Conrad Rickamore for Here Lies Love.
Okay. My predictions are, I'll preface this by saying, I first saw Paul Alexander Nolan in West Side Story at the Stratford Shakespeare Festival in 2009, directed by Gary Griffin, opposite Jelena Kennedy as Maria. Which was an extraordinary production. I think like the year before, Nikki M. James did Caesar and Cleopatra with Christopher Plummer there. So great, great run at the Stratford Festival in Ontario for the 2024 Broadway season. But I don't have him on my list, alas. But I know you are.
I'm trying really hard to make it happen. I need people
I share your love for him generally. I don't feel like he transcended a role that I think feels significant enough, but whatever. My predictions are Daniel Radcliffe, Merrily We Roll Along, Brenda Victor Dixon in Hell's Kitchen, and then I think I differ from you otherwise. I have Roger Bart in Back to the Future. I think nominators have all been invited back, and he seems significantly better in the role than he did 9 months ago. I have Stephen Skybell in Cabaret. That seems, Herr Schultz seems like a role that often gets a lot of critical attention.
He always gets nominated. That role just always does.
And then I think I still feel like Liam Pierce could get nominated here for How to Dance in Ohio, because I feel like for anyone that feels like they want to recognize the show in any way, that's the obvious place to do it. There's such a spread that if only a small contingent of people, but I did have, I mean, Joshua Boone, I think, is very much, I had him at first and then took him out. So it could go a lot of ways. I didn't feel like, I mean, Ben Cook's role is central, but I don't know how many dancers people want to give nods to, but we'll see, who like don't speak or sing. And then my wants would be Brenda Victor Dixon, Daniel Radcliffe, Liam Pierce. I loved Kyle Ramar Freeman's Lion and The Wiz. May have just been me. And then Jason Schmidt was my, as Soda Pop was my favorite outside. I was like, what are the names? My favorite performance in The Outsiders, with an outside nod to Michael Urien's Spamalot, who I did like a lot. Yeah.
Featured actor in a musical, there are like probably 10 to 15 people who I would not be mad about if they got nominated. There are just like two or three. I'm like, I would really like this to happen. Yeah. And Paul is very similar to Tomiko, where he's not always given a great show or a great role, but he's always great. And there have been three different times where he could have been nominated and didn't. And because this field is kind of wide open, once you get Daniel and Steven out of the way, like there's still three slots where it's like, it could go anywhere. I'm like, why not? You know, just, there are no performances here where I'm like, the material is so strong and the person so incredible in it that like it would knock out Paul easily for me. Because I don't think Water for Elephants is a very good musical, but I do think Paul is the best performance in it by far. And he just does what a good actor would do, which is, you know, infuse nuance and humanity, but a thrilling theatricality to it, and also sings the ever-living shit out of it. I have been very vocal about how much I don't like Back to the Future. I like Roger Bart, but I don't think that show allows anyone in it to really give a great performance. It allows people to be memorable and likable, but not necessarily like good. There were a lot of people who've been trying to convince me that Hugh Coles is a lock because he was nominated for the Oliviers. And I was like, Elena Roger was nominated for Evita. Right. You know, think these things do happen. You know, Sharon Clarke won the Olivier and didn't win here. And the dude from A Little Night Music opposite Catherine Zeta-Jones, I think, was nominated at the Oliviers and was not nominated here. Like, it's a new group. It's a new voting pool. So you can't take the Oliviers into account. I took... what was it? I said this. Oh, the reason is the only reason I also had what's his face from Stereophonic, Eli Gelb in for Stereophonic, is he was the only one of the featured actors to get nominated at the Lortels, which again, different pool, but it sort of shows who's sort of being memorable to people on this side of the pond. Yeah. So it just allows you to sort of see what people find memorable in a show. But yeah, I would love it if Conrad got in.
Sorry.
I said, I would love it if Conrad got in. The thing about Brandon, so you're the second person to say Brandon for Hell's Kitchen, and Brandon is really good, but like, talk about a role where you come on for a second in act one, go away for like an hour, and then come on and nail what you do. But it was a situation of like, it's so little stage time and a role for me that makes honestly no sense. What he does is he gives his beautiful vocals and his charisma and sex appeal, so at the very least you're like, oh, I get why Shosh would make a baby with this man. But I was also like, I just don't understand who this guy is. He's painted so simply.
I mean, I don't disagree with that, but I think for me it was just like, there are, and I think collectively nominated four vocal performances from that role, and I just feel like the experience of just like the stacking of like person after person who sounds incredible feels like, you're like, how can I spread this wealth? At least that would be my, I don't know, my instinct, but we'll see. The only performance that is sort of in contention that I did not see was Conrad Rickamore. It was Out the Night I Saw Here Last Love. And I sensed that role being sort of nominatable, but I,
yeah, you know, he's a less aggressive Che. You know, he's a much more endearing and charismatic Che. So people enjoy that. And Conrad is a very handsome, very talented man. So that helps. But also, it's not happening. I feel like Here Lies Love is either going to come up extraordinarily short nomination morning. Not, I don't think totally empty handed. I think it'll get, if it comes up short, it'll be like two, maybe three nominations, or it could get like a solid six. And in that six would include Conrad. But alas, I think that's it. I think that's everybody. I think we've covered everything.
Did it.
Yeah, we did it, Joe. So, Dan, this has been so delightful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I am thrilled to have been allowed to share this space.
Where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Yeah, so my podcast, The Present Stage Conversations with Theater Writers, which includes conversations with John Patrick Shanley, Adam Gettle, Jocelyn Bio, lots of people from the season, is available anywhere you stream podcasts. And then I write for Slant Magazine. I'm on Twitter at Dan Rubin's Tweets. And then lastly, my nonprofit, which has been alluded to, is called Hear Your Song. We work with youth with serious illnesses and complex health needs to make their voices heard through collaborative songwriting. So we help kids with a whole variety of mental and physical health diagnoses write their own songs. We did a concert with the company of Kimberly Akimbo, and Janine Tesori and David Lindsay Bear did a masterclass with one of our kids last year, and Ali Mazzi sang a song about frogs. That was amazing. So you can check out our YouTube channel or visit hearyoursong.org if you want to check some of that out. So I hope people will check out the Present Stage podcast to hear some interviews with folks who are eligible for some of these awards.
Phenomenal. If you want to follow me, I'm on Instagram only at Matt Koplik, usual spelling. If you like the podcast, give us a nice 5-star rating or a little review. We did get a new one today. It's pretty short, but I will still do the Light in the Piazza overture music, because the last one we didn't do it because it was just one sentence. And this one is, I think, three. So we'll do that. Cue the Light in the Piazza overture. 5 stars. My favorite Broadway podcast, written by Anne Boleyn Was Innocent. Amazing name. I always look forward to every new episode. I enjoy Matt Koplik's analysis and breakdown of shows. The episode on Miss Saigon is a must-listen for any new listener. End of review. Thank you so much. That's, I think, like the third time someone has written about the Miss Saigon episode, which remains, and probably will remain, the longest episode of Broadway Breakdown to date.
I'm sorry I could not contend.
No, listen, I think people were somehow willing to listen to 3.5 hours of Miss Saigon. I don't know if anybody wants to listen to 4 hours of Tony predictions. It's like, wrap it up. I want to know what you say about the next one. And I know I had people who were like, how could you talk about Miss Saigon for 3.5 hours? And I said, my response was, you want to know the crazy thing? I cut out an hour. James and I had spoken for 4.5 hours and I had to cut it down. So that's all she wrote about that. Dan, as you know, we close out every episode with a little diva that I'll put in post. Who would you like to sing us out today for this Tony prediction episode?
Gosh, I'm unprepared. I'm going to go with... Can it be a standard issue?
It can be whoever you want.
I'm gonna go with Kelly O'Hara, because I do think she gave the greatest performance of the year in the
cross. Phenomenal.
I would do her Sweet Smile of Success "What If" moment.
Oh,
her first encounter with Brian D'Arcy James.
Deep cut, Sweet Smile of Success. All right, that's, if that is what baby wants, that is what baby gets.
Love it.
So check us out next week, guys, when we will respond to the Tony nominations. In fact, actually, yeah, this will so this episode is going to come out like 2 days before the nominations, so the reaction episode will be like 2 days after that. So check us back for those reactions, and we will see you next time. Take it away, Kelly. Bye.
What if he could burst on the scene in a highly awaited debut?
You're talking crazy.
What if you remember how recently you were a nobody too? Just give him the start he deserves. We can maneuver the curves. Sydney, don't take us halfway. I want my brother to say, Susan, I'd like you to meet a gifted young man, a man you should know.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the Rise Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org. Because only together we rise.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.